Morning, Sir Bethany. Morning, Sir Bethany.
Mwalimu Samachonse.
Yes, it's 9 o'clock. If we've got enough members, IEC and GPWB are in the meeting.
Thank you very much, Mr. Matonsi, and greetings to Minister, Mr. Mtoledi, Deputy Minister Nzunza, the Director General, and your team at Home Affairs, Deputy Commissioner Love, and entire commissioners, the CEO, Mama Abolo, and entire executive staff, the CEO of Government Printing Works, Ms. Fosi, and our entire team, the colleagues. We today receiving the APP of IEC and Government Printing Works. We have already recorded Commissioner Love on our appreciation for the work that has been done and contributed to the IEC of Mr. Mashinini, who his term has ended. We're fully aware of the task ahead, and we wish him well in his endeavor. We're also appraised with the recent developments around the process that has to be taken by the committee to deliberate and reflect on the course of action to submit for a commissioner and also for the consideration of parliament. At that point, when we're going to engage, I'm sure that you'll be appraised on the process. Well, also, the committee notes that you have recently tabled the report on the local government elections that were held last year, and the committee will schedule that for reflection and interaction, and we hope you'll come back to interface with the portfolio committee. Also note that the Government Printing Works will be also presenting their APP. And I think it's worth noting that the committee has been interacting with Government Printing Works on various issues, including conducting oversight to the Government Printing Works on many issues that have been submitted to the portfolio committee. We have gone through the report of both the IEC and Government Printing Works, and members of the committee will interact with the APP reports. Members will not take a lot of time. We'll invite Mr. Matonsi to give us the apologies, if there are any apology, and invite the Minister of Home Affairs to introduce the team which to present both the IEC, and then we'll invite Commissioner Love to introduce the team and the report, and thereafter we'll then invite Ms. Fosi to present the report of the Government Printing Works. Mr. Matonsi?
Yes, Chairperson, I've got only two apologies, that of Ms. Kanyile and Ms. Lefase. That's all, Chairperson, for my side.
Thank you. Noted. Minister Mtoledi?
Thank you very much, Chairperson. Let me also acknowledge and welcome the Deputy Commissioner, Ms. Janet Love, and her team, as well as the CEO, Mr. Mumabolo, CEO of Government Printing Works, Ms. Fosi, the DG of Home Affairs, and the honorable members of the portfolio committee. Chairperson, let me give to the DG to the Ms. Fosi to take over to announce the staff from her side. I don't think the DG of Home Affairs should do that. It will be done by Ms. Fosi. The DG of Home Affairs is just acknowledged. Thank you very much. Can you introduce your staff, please, Ms. Fosi?
Honorable Minister, Chairperson, Honorable Members, good morning. My name is Alina Foti. I'm going to introduce the team from Government Central Work connected to the virtual platform. I'm going to start with the CFO, Mr. Ian van der Merwe, the General Manager HR, Ms. Michelle Modise, for the acting General Manager Operations and Production, Mr. Kuben Mudli, for the acting CIO, Mr. Komoto Tamaha, as well as Director Internal Audit, Ms. Constance Shibambo. That is the team that comprises the EXCO of government team was connected to the platform. Thank you, Minister. Thank you, Honorable Chairman.
Thank you, Minister.
No, that will be all from our side.
Thank you very much, Deputy Commissioner Love.
Thank you very much, Chairperson, and greetings to you and the other honourable members. Also, greetings to the Minister, the DG, and his team. I'm accompanied this morning by two fellow commissioners, Dr. Masuku, known to all of you, she can greet, and also Mr. Moyepia. We do have apologies from the judge. She is in court. She has indicated that she will try and join us. From the administration, the team, as you've mentioned, Chairperson, is led by our CEO, Mr. Mamabolo, and he's accompanied by various members of EXCO, including the Chief Financial Officer, the Chief Executive for Political Party Funding, the DCO for Electoral Operations, and the Head of the Commission Services, Mr. Kalembe. I think that the most of the presentation, of course, will be given by the CEO and the CFO. Just by way of introduction, I wanted to appreciate the work of the committee in really spending time with us and appraising us of all the developments that you've had to deal with in terms of possible changes to the electoral system. And of course, this particular budget and APP comes at a time where we are looking ahead to some of those developments. We are also looking ahead to the full decade. And so I think that the way in which you will see the thinking and the budget has been crafted is to look beyond the coming year, beyond 2024, to the end of the decade. As you all know, we are working in a climate of far greater uncertainty, also change globally and locally. In terms of issues to do with economy, issues to do with war, disaster, and so on. We've also seen a number of changes in the electoral space. We note and thank the chairperson and the committee members for acknowledging the contribution of Mr. Mashanini. His presence, I know, was felt by you as well as by the commission as a whole. And so obviously there is that change, but more importantly, there is the change that we see in terms of political party funding. We've just come to the end of the first year cycle, and of course, follow up to that is going to require quite a lot of effort. As I've indicated, changes to the electoral systems and ensuring our electoral systems are responding to the technology requirements of the future, as well as some of the developments in the social media space. And all of these are things that we've tried to get our budget and our APP to respond to, and I think that you'll have the detail presented to you. Before I hand over to the CEO, I just wanted to say, from the perspective of the Commission, we really want to, in front of the members of the committee, acknowledge again the tremendous achievement of the CEO and his team in ensuring that we get a clean audit. And I think that that has been with a huge amount of very consistent, dedicated work. and really is worthy of significant appreciation. So thanks very much. I'm going to hand over to the CEO and his team. Thanks, Chair.
Thank you very much, Deputy Commissioner, for your opening remarks. CEO Mamabolo.
Thank you, Chairperson. Greetings, members of the committee. Greetings to the Minister, Deputy Minister, and my colleagues in the department, as well as my colleagues at the Government Printing Works, as well as the executive team accompanying me. I'm going to ask that Matonzi to assist us with the presentation.
Okay, Mr. Mamabolo, I made you a co-host. Do you want us to share?
Oh, okay.
Yeah, that's made fine. You a co-host already.
Sure. Person, I'll be 1 second. Mr. Matunza, I'm struggling a bit. Could you just place it on, please?
Eddie, I can do it.
Okay, thanks, Adam.
Adam, are you still working on the 1 second request by the CEO? Well, it's another minute you must give.
I'm sharing it now, Jeff, but sorry, just a bit of a delay here.
Okay, let's allow Mr. Salmon to work on the presentation, and the CEO, you can proceed with the presentation.
Thank you, Chairperson. We present this annual performance plan of the Electoral Commission, and it embodies the articulation of our constitutional and legal mandate. It is a programmatized endeavor to deliver on the referenced constitutional mandate. It is a plan that is meant to lay the groundwork for the preparation for the 2024 national and provincial election. It is against this backdrop that the foundations for the planning and eventual execution of the 2024 election is going to be taking place. Now, in terms of the contents of the presentation, which will be undertaken in two parts, I'll do the overview of the annual performance plan, and we'll get into the actual measurement of performance that we propose to the portfolio committee, and then go into the budget distribution, which underpin the plan. The the strategic plan and the annual performance plan have had to be revised in the light of the COVID pandemic, as well as its related restrictions and the eventual budget cuts that were prescribed by National Treasurer. And the following elements form part of the consideration in the development of this plan. Firstly, that we felt an internal consultative process in the financial year 2018-2019. We've looked at the National Development Plan and integrated development planning in the public sector. The APP is also grounded on the revised framework for strategic plans and annual performance plan as prescribed. And an environmental analysis was performed, which has noted innovations in digital technologies, as well as the impact of that on electoral democracy. In particular, the impact of social media platforms on the delivery of electoral democracy, certainly in the country and elsewhere in the globe. We've also noted increased litigation on electoral processes. Just by way of example, in 2000, when we had the first local government elections, we barely had 10 cases that went to the electoral court. On this occasion, we had over 200 objections and no less than 15 applications that went to the electoral court. Now that speaks to the overall consciousness of citizens about opportunities and avenues availed to them for electoral justice. And it is not necessarily a negative thing, rather it's people expressing and vindicating their rights in relation to electoral justice. But the plan has also taken account of the economic and fiscal climate of the Republic, because we are delivering electoral democracy within a particular fiscal and financial climate. So that context is important. It informs how much resources are availed to the Commission. So the plan, therefore, is predicated on that which has been appropriated by Parliament rather than that which we desire. Of course, as the committee is aware, it's now busy with the amendments to the Electoral Act to facilitate the candidature of independents in provincial and national election. So that has been taken into account, and the changes that will be necessary emanating from whatever electoral system is eventually approved. But this plan also takes into account the continuous liaison with political parties, because we have a structured liaison with political parties where advice is given on how the electoral program has to unfold. So in terms of the overview of our APP, we present a budget of 2.2 billion, which is distributed over four programs. And we are proposing 14 targets to track the performance of the institution. Now, the 14 targets, as you will see shortly, are really trying to look at outcomes and not so much the, they are not input targets. Because we think in order for us to correctly measure the impact of the organization, you've got to look at the outcomes rather than the input. Because it's very easy to spend and monitor spending and related things rather than looking at what the impact of the spend is. So what we've tried to do on this occasion is really to look at the outcomes rather than the input target. In so doing, you avoid having to deal with detailed targets. Those are monitored at the level of an organizational scorecard, which is the basis upon which my performance contract is predicated. So if we go to program one is essentially an effective business process program. It looks at the institutional effectiveness and institutional governance. And its strategic outcome is to strengthen institutional effectiveness at all levels and also provide for the overall strategic management of the institution and support centralized corporate and financial management services. So this relates to your effectiveness of the institution and the processes, the business processes that undergird the effectiveness of the institution. And in this program, we propose four targets, which are one, the number of quarterly reviews of our strategic risk register by the executive risk management within 30 days after the start of the next quarter. In the implicated year 2022-2023, we propose targets of four such reviews of the strategic risk register. Now, risk management is critical because you've got to be able to anticipate the risks in your environment and have mitigation measures so that if those risks eventuate, they don't lead to business interruption. So, which is why this is a very strategic exercise for the institution. So we will be reviewing, therefore, our risks at least continuously, but at the level of the strategic risk management, there'll be four such reviews. And number two, to provide a cutting-edge, stable, and secure ICT environment that meets all functional needs of the Commission and support innovative business processes. And our indicator there is the minimum annual percentage network and application system availability measured in hours through a system-generated report. So our target is, let's just go back, Our target is to have system availability at 97%. And that is in line with industry standards. That at all levels of the organization, our system availability upkeep should be at 97% which would be inclusive as well of the public-facing services, be it our website, which bears services such as, am I registered, where do I vote, as well as your online registration service, including the services that are on our web, where a person can apply for a special vote, check whether their special vote has been approved and so on. So we're saying at least 97% of the time we have to have system availability. The third indicator in this program on page 10 relates to the human capacity. The human capacity of any institution is a critical resource for its ability to deliver on its mandate. So here we're talking to recruit and retain talented permanent staff complement to meet the operational requirements as well as our constitutional obligation. But because we're operating in a constrained fiscal climate, not all posts on the approved organogram are funded. So here we're tracking that at least 95% in 95% of the funded posts are filled, and that is about 938 posts, which is 95% of funded posts. We are alive to the labor, the unemployment rate in the country, and the need to get people into employment. And which is why we're striving to employ people, place people into the organogram to the extent that those posts are funded. And then lastly, in this program, we endeavor to obtain a clean audit, because a clean audit, in our opinion, speaks to the good governance of the institution. It speaks to the policy environment. It speaks to the oversight role of the commission. It speaks to our ability to implement the advice we receive from this committee. But it also speaks to the overall probity of the officials in the institution. And we remain so committed to obtaining a clean audit because, in our view, it's a state imperative. As the state, we seek to ensure that there's clean governance and so on. And this target speaks precisely to that imperative. Thank you. So if you go to Program 2 really is the heartbeat of the organization, because it is actually the core business of the institution, the management delivery of free and fair elections, by striving for excellence at voting station level, ensuring accessibility and suitability of voting facilities and processes, managing election results and maximizing electoral justice for all stakeholders, enhancing the credibility of the voter's role, and ensuring compliance with legal prescripts and continuously improving the legislative framework. And in this year, being a non-election year, there are two targets in this program. And these two targets speak to the number of elections set aside. Our view is that a set aside of an election by a court speaks to transgressions or the incorrect application of electoral prescripts in the organizing of that election which is set aside. And if we achieve a zero set aside of the elections that we manage, it means, therefore, that our processes are conducted in line with the prescripts, be they the Electoral Act, the Municipal Electoral Act, and the regulations that underpin that. So which means our voters' roll processes, our candidate nomination processes, our voting stations operation, our vote counting processes, and the record of results have happened in line with the prescript. So it is therefore a strategic target for us. It's an outcome target because it deals with the political stability that also is created by ensuring that your elections are not set aside and the resultant councils and so on, they can function without having to be rerun and mayors are appointed but the council is set aside and so on. So it also speaks to the creation of a political stability at the level of municipal council. So it's a very strategic target for the institution. Number two, just 1 minute, Adam. The number two is the voters' role. Our target in the year that is that is being the year in which we presented this budget for and the APP, we propose a target of 26,180,000 voters on the roll. You could say for the previous year we had 26.5 million people. The reality is this. In between elections, there's a net decline in the size of the voters' roll. The reason for that is absent an election that is inside, people don't generally register. People only get motivated to register on the roll when an election is inside and when there's a huge campaign driven by the commission as well as in the context of campaigns by political parties. So people get mobilized in that manner. And that does not mean the commission won't be registering people. The commission registration services remain available and there are various avenues to access the registration service of the commission. One, at the office of the municipal electoral officer, you could visit that office at, during business hours and register. Our online registration service is available 24/7. So any person with a smart card can register at any moment. Thirdly, in wards in which there are by-elections, special registration drives are made to ensure that people could register and update their registration details. We've activated a tertiary institution registration campaign, which we launched in March at the University of the Witwatersrand. And that program is ongoing until September to really engage in civic education discussions on campuses together with providing a registration service at those campuses. Similarly, within the formal schooling system, we have launched in partnership with the Department of Basic Education a program to get learners to do civic education programs, as well as get registered. That program was launched in the Northern Cape about 2 weeks, 2 weeks ago. The other reality pertaining to the size of the voter's role is the mortality, natural mortality. We do lose an average of 35,000 persons on the voter's roll per month due to natural mortality. So in between major electoral events, there's that net loss also arising from natural mortality. Thank you. Now, the third program is our outreach program. And this program relates to the informing and engaging citizens and stakeholders in electoral democracy. This is where we mobilize society and its components about electoral democracy so that people are enthused enough to participate in electoral processes. Education is also provided here, as well as creation of platforms for dialogue, and as well as cultivating an environment conducive to the conduct of free and fair elections. In this program, we propose five targets. Firstly, to look at research, because it is important that our programs are informed by scientific information, and that it's important to understand the correct public sentiment about current political issues, and research becomes very important in having that understanding. Adam, let's go to page 18. In that regard, we propose three research outputs in this year. We work in this area with the Human Sciences Research Council, who do research projects on behalf of the Commission. And those research products are shared with political parties, because some of the sentiments of the public relates to the quality of governance on the one hand, and perceptions about the quality of political parties, the quality of performance in municipal councils, etc., etc. So it becomes important to share those research products with political parties, because some of the sentiments derived therefrom relate to their conduct and their performance in government. Then the number of thought leadership interactions per year. This is where we engage in thought leadership interactions with academia, civil society, political parties, traditional leadership, and so on and so on. So it's a structured way of engaging with all those constituencies. And then thirdly is the number of civic and democracy education events. We propose 18 such events across the country, where we provide directly to communities civic education programs. Because it's a non-election year, and obviously the budget is reduced in between elections, we can't do more than we have done in the similar vein like we did in the last financial year. So 18,000 is proposed, but if you look at 2024, which is an election year, then there'll be an increase and intensification of engagement with a direct engagement with members of the public. And by direct, I mean physical as well as virtual platforms in that 18,000. And number of meetings that the commission holds with key stakeholders per annum, 10, this is where we give information to crucial stakeholders like labor, business organizations, and so on. Again, it will increase as we build up to 2024. The last target is the conglomerate target, which speaks to social media. Now, there are two aspects to social media which are crucial. Firstly, it's the use of social media to propagate the messages and the information and the education from the Commission. So we deal with those targets in that conglomeration. But there's also an important aspect related to social media, and that is, how do we deal with the deleterious impact of social media to the credibility of elections? In other words, misinformation and disinformation campaigns to destroy electoral prospects of electoral contestants. And there's a program that we're running together with Media Monitoring Africa to know, to receive complaints, investigate complaints, and then interact with the platforms to do takedowns where those are justified, and so on. So, and it is a program that it's finding traction. But it's one that we want to strengthen as we build towards 2024. We also are working with the other regional bodies of election management bodies on the continent to develop a continental guideline. A continental guideline for the management of social media to ensure credible election. And there's a whole program that, rather project that we are working on to have a continental guideline that will be very beneficial to EMBs across the continent. The last program is program 4, and this relates to party funding. as Commissioner Love indicated in her opening remarks, the first year of the implementation of the new Act came to an end on the 31st of March. And a lot of lessons have been drawn from that experience. But in this program, basically, we focus on the strategic outcomes of continuing the enhancements of transparency in elections and party funding. And we're looking at compliance with legislation and to strengthen cooperation and providing liaison and services between the commission parties and candidates. As well, we provide here for the registration of political parties, because as you know, the commission is also a register of political parties. And in this program, we're looking at three targets. One is the number of disbursements to represented parties per annum. We have to provide disbursements to parties every quarter. So our target there is 4. And then the number of liaison sessions held with stakeholders and potential contributors to the multi-party democracy fund. The commission is of the firm view that it is part of its mandate to ensure that it goes out there and engage with potential contributors to the multi-party democracy fund. Because otherwise it becomes a fund that is hollow, that is not resourced, if there is no conscious and active program of the commission to engage with people who could make contributions to the fund. And in this year, we proposed 10 such engagements. Now, the number of publications of declarations by political parties and private donors, we propose 4, because we have to, on every quarter, publish the declarations that are made by parties as well as private donors. So, Chairperson, that's the on the program side of the APP, and I'll now hand over to the CFO, Ms. Mbatha, to take us through the financial part of the presentation. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Ms.
Mbatha.
Thank you, Chair. I think with all protocol being observed, I'll just get into the numbers. Chair, the first slide really shows us an overview of what it is that is sitting in our budget for 22-23. We're looking at 2.2 billion. If we can move to the next slide. Over the MTF, you'll see that we have had to absorb some cuts. For 22-23, we're actually left with 2,223,000,000. For 23-24, after the cuts, we've left with 2,232,000,000. And then in the latter year of 24-25, we're actually left with 2,332,000,000. And then you'll see the cuts. The total cuts over these 3 years really accumulate to the 769,007,049. If we then move forward, this is just a graphical depiction of what I've really highlighted in terms of our cuts, which would be the budgets over the 3 years versus the cuts. If we can then move over to the next slide. What are the impacts of these budget cuts? If I look at 23-24, this is ahead of the 2020-2024 NPE. We've got the issue of that the second registration weekend is not funded. The democracy as well as the educational feed workers, the deafs, are also not funded. The expansion staff in the period in which that we are appointing is going to be reduced. And I think this really highlights that we can't absorb any cuts going forward. If I look at the year 24-25, if there's a possibility of a synchronized election, I'm saying possibility, this we must also be mindful of the fact this is really uncharted territory. And definitely it will have huge operation as well as financial impact as a result of legislative change. But these are yet not known. Also, I think I need to also highlight that there is no previous baseline that can be used as a basis of comparison if we go into this uncharted territory. Next slide. Also, let's be mindful that we still need to deal with the outcome of the constitutional decision that relates to the Electoral Act being founded to be unconstitutional. Parliament did grant, not Parliament, but the courts granted 24 months to the Parliament to revise the legislation, but these revisions are also going to come at a cost. Although not quantified, we can clearly indicate where the significant impacts will be found. Firstly, we'll definitely need to rewrite our ICT and business application, namely the candidate nomination system, the logistic information system, and the result system. In addition to these system changes, we'd also have to relook at retraining our staff, possibility of redelimitation of voting districts, and the possibility of reconfiguration of the local offices. Next slide. Program one, if we now get into the details of program one. Program one for the year 22-23, we're looking at 838 million for program one. What are the constraints that I have under program one? So first of all, we did an org review in 2017. We haven't been able to fully implement that org review for permanent staff. This structure is actually currently funded for about 90% of the post. We've also had to cut back on staff training as well as development. You also are aware that we do want to embark on a new permanent home, but with cuts, this really does reduce the available funds. Next slide. This is just an overview of the MTF. We can proceed. This is just graphically showing you the years from 2023. You'll see that 22-23, we're looking at 838 million, 23-24 we are looking at 820 million, and then 24-25 we're looking at 911 million for program one over the MTF budget. That's expenditure. Program number two, this is the core of the business. We're looking at 781 million for the year 22-23 for program two. What are the pressure points in program two? I think you'll also be aware that with the commission is really wants to increase efficiencies in the electoral processes, and that means investments into technology. We are still interested in the e-voting and the piloting of the project, but this project really remains unfunded. Secondly, appointment and funding of electoral staff. We haven't had any inflation adjustment to those rates since 2016. For 2021 LGE, we also had to reduce the period in which we brought them on board because of budget constraints. That's just an overview, if we can proceed to the next slide. This is just a graphical depiction of what it looks like for Program 2 over the MTF. You'll see for the year 2022-23, you're looking at 781 million. The subsequent year is 1,233 million. The subsequent year after there is 1,264 million. Program number three, our outreach program, we're looking at a budget for 22-23 at 162 million. What are our pressure points in this program? For the mocks and deaf, these are coordinated and democracy educators on the field workers. We also haven't been able to adjust their rates since 2016. For 2021, we had no choice but to also reduce the time that we brought them on board to start doing their work due to budget constraints. Then just the general impact on this program is that normally, the reduced budgets really affect the ability of the organization to fully fund initiatives that really are there to promote as well as to foster awareness and participation of the electoral process. If we can go to the next slide. This is just to graphically show you what it looks like over the MTF. If you look at 22-23, you've got 162 million. Subsequent year, you've got 258 million. And then the latter year, you've got 236 million. If I go to program number four, party funding, we're looking at 25 million sitting in the program for 22-23. The constraints that we've really had in around this program is that we've really, really kept a lean structure for program four, just to manage the cost on that program. If you move into the latter slide, the latter one, you'll then see that through the 3 years, it's all been allocated 25 million, 25 million, 25 million. Thank you. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much, CFO. Can I establish if that is a complete presentation, CEO?
Yes, indeed so, Chairperson.
Okay, thanks very much, Deputy Commissioner Love and your team, the CEO and the CFO, for the presentation. We're going to invite members to interact with the presentation. I'm going to request Honorable Izel, Honorable Molekwa, Honorable Tito, Honorable Ross, and Honorable Pillay, some members who I've identified in attendance. Mr. Matonsi, you'll alert me if other members have joined. I might not have recognized them. Honorable Izel?
Sorry, Jefferson. I had a connection issue. Can you hear me?
Yes, I can hear you. You can proceed. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Jefferson. I just wanted to ask, first and foremost, I think, firstly, I want to thank the IEC for the presentation. of course, we come from an election where there was a very low voter turnout, and I agree with Mr. Mamabolo that, you know, this is an issue that is not only needs to be addressed by the IEC, but of course by political parties as well, because there seems to be a very low trust deficit between political parties and the general public. But with regards to the slide where it speaks about the number of voters that we want to register, there is, I heard the explanation, but the target is reduced from 26 million 540 to 26,180,000, and then it remains stagnant for the years coming. So for 2022, 2023, and 2024, it remains stagnant. So considering that we've got 40 million eligible voters in South Africa, I just wanted to get an indication why that is the case, that we don't actually in the outer years increase the target, and that the target actually is reduced in this case. With regard to the civic education programs, I recently saw that the IEC is rolling out programs to both the University of Wits, as well as that it will become part of the school curriculum. So I just wanted to check whether the IEC has got any plans to roll out these civic education programs to other universities, and whether this program that will form part of the school curriculum, whether it will only be taught in 2022, or whether it will actually become a permanent feature of the school curriculum, because I think it's actually something that will be quite useful to help us address the issues around, you know, low voter turnout, around the registration of voters, and ensuring that our citizens are actively part of elections. And that we start to mitigate some of the issues that we found in the last elections. And then finally, my question around social media. I think the IEC is doing very well in terms of its social media campaigns. However, in the last election, we saw that one specific post caused quite a lot of negative media attention, or the public was generally a bit annoyed or unhappy with one specific post. And whether there were any lessons learned in this regard, and whether there will be better checks and balances going forward in terms of some of the posts and content that we put out on social media. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you, Honorable Zen, for your contributions. Honorable Molekwa.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. Let me start by appreciating the report has been presented by the IEC. And also appreciate the performance in obtaining the unqualified audit opinion. We hope that they will be continuing to do a steady work in maintaining the status quo. Chairperson, I just wanted to check with the IEC, although we do understand that there were challenges experienced by the IEC during the 2021 local government election. So I just want to check whether there are any plan in place in order to make sure that irrespective of the animosity that has been there during the local government election and the reaction by members, especially on there were no clear line whether the election will continue or not. But fortunately, the election continued with those challenges experienced. With regard to the Masenake Commission and other issues related to the preparation for the election for 2021. So I just wanted to check whether the IEC is ready now in making sure that they put more resources on the voter registration campaign and the election campaign so that those programs should be intensified. Because you'll remember that during the local government election, we have experienced low turnout from the voters. So I just want to check whether there's enough strength and resources put in place to make sure that those things should not be repeated, Chairperson. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much, Honorable Molekwa, for your contributions. Honorable Tito.
Thanks, Chairperson, and greetings to everyone who is there. Chair, my question is only one on the electoral operations. Like our previous presentation on that one, Mr. Mamabolo said that there was a decline and that political parties and also the commissions, they are not mobilizing enough. But now, what about the people who are going to get registered during the registration weekend, and then they and only find out during the elections that they don't appear in the voters' rolls? What about those ones? What are we going to do in terms of making sure that the people are registered, and then and that on the day of the vote of the voting, they appear on the voters' rolls? Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Honorable Pito, for your contributions. Honorable Ross.
Thank you, Chair, and thank you to the IEC presenters. I just have three questions. So first of all, again, congratulations on the clean audit. I don't think it can be underestimated. Really heartfelt congratulations on that. I was covered by Honorable Lazelle in terms of the school's democracy program and the social media campaign. My three questions are firstly on the mobile units that go to schools, so the Home Affairs mobile units. Does the IEC go with, once those IDs obviously get delivered to the school, does the local IEC representative go with to ensure that those learners register there and then? My second question is on the slide about the budget implications, and it talks about a 24-25 NPE. Is that a national election or a local election? Because I see it talks about possible synchronized elections. So I'd just like to get clarity on that. And then, we've previously discussed the need for the IEC to move away from leasing buildings to owning them. So if we can just get some progress towards the IEC having their own head office and what timeframes we're looking at in this regard. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Honorable Ross, for your contributions. Honorable Pile.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. Mine is on democracy education. And I'm just concerned that, you know, if we look at the last local government election and voter turnout, and I understand that there may be many challenges coupled with that. But I think, you know, we have to admit that in the last one, it was very limited, if any, in terms of voter education. And so what are the plans? Because I see that, you know, that has been reduced in terms of targets. And then the second one is just to ensure that the IEC, and it's just coming in line with what Honorable Mulekwa has just said, that we don't find ourselves in a place wanting, particularly, you know, what happened last year where we anticipated an extension and we didn't get granted an extension, and hence we had to run an election in a short space of time, that the election, that the IEC starts planning ahead and start putting into place a timeline, a calendar of events, processes and procedures to ensure that we don't have ourselves delayed. In fact, if anything, they should be prepared at all times. And then I did hear a comment earlier on, but it wasn't, you know, it was just in passing about how we adapt to changes and new technology and methods. And just perhaps, where are we with that in terms of looking at alternatives and other approaches? Otherwise, thank you very much. Everything else is covered.
Thank you very much, honorable members, for your comments and questions. We're going to request CEO to take responses and delegate. Then after, we'll request the Deputy Commissioner Love to take responses and perhaps delegates also to other commissioners. I'm just going to, we're going to run it, try to run it like that. Your discretion, the CEO, you'll respond and delegate to the executive team and the commissioner left to the commissioners if they want to make responses. Then we'll close the item with the DM and the minister. CEO Mamabolo.
Thank you, Chairperson. The issues related to social media, Mr. Mosri will deal with, as well as civic education. And issues related to voter registration and registration weekend and issues of appearance on the voter's roll. Mr. Shibori will deal with those. But just to state the following as preliminary comment. The application to the Constitutional Court, which was unsuccessful for the deferment of the election, in a sense, it has created electoral jurisprudence that we now need to follow, meaning there's a precedent that has been set for the Commission and for all electoral role players to follow for the future. What the judgment in our understanding has done is that despite difficult circumstances that may be at play at any given moment, you cannot go beyond the constitutionally determined time frame. You've got to run an election even in those circumstances and adjust your standards for free and fair elections. Do as best as you can to ensure a free and fair election. But in assessing the freeness and fairness of the election, be mindful of the limitations imposed on you by the prevailing circumstances. So that's really the central tenet of that judgment. Now, with that understanding, we are already commencing the preparations for 2024. Because members of the committee are correct that we cannot find ourselves in that dialogue as to whether an election can happen or cannot happen, because we now have a very clear constitutional jurisprudence that had come out of the Concord. We just recently had a review with the National Party Liaison Committee, and areas of improvement have been noted, and we will be engaging with the National Party Liaison Committee on the progress we are making vis-a-vis the identified areas of improvement. But Honorable Mulekwa also mentions the animosity that arose in the context of whether, of dealing with the question whether we're proceeding or we're not proceeding. And in that context, very unfortunate remarks were made regarding the credibility of the Commission. And in most instances, without supporting evidence. Now, that has a damaging effect on the political, on the components of the political system, especially in circumstances where there is no evidence to support the allegations being made on social media by leaders of political parties. I think as a responsible actors within the political system, where anyone is convinced that the commission is acting outside of the standards imposed by the Constitution and the relevant laws, there are procedures to approach the Electoral Court on evidence and say, for this 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 reasons, we believe Commissioner this or Commissioner that is not fit and proper to continue holding office. Then the judiciary, by way of the Electoral Court, can evaluate that evidence and make a determination whether it's justified or not. That, I think, is a more mature manner of dealing with those types of things. For instance, if any political party thinks that the CEO is acting in a manner that is partial, he's not independent, and so on and so on, the best way is to submit a formal complaint with the Commission on evidence so that the Commission can be given an opportunity to evaluate that evidence and make a determination whether there's veracity in those issues. But we tended to have allegations made which are not followed up, not supported by evidence. And ultimately what that does is to create a situation where members of the public begin to have doubts about the credibility of the process even before the elections are held. So I think that type of we need really to create a consciousness about what we say and how we support it in a context of a raging electoral campaign. And so that's quite important, I think, going forward. The issue about the building that Mr. Rose is raising, we're working to do exactly that. What are the timelines? Our timeline is to conclude that process before the end of this financial year preparations are well underway for engagement with the Office of the Chief Procurement Officer. The issue about the synchronized election, it's a national policy discussion that the country must have. It's an idea that has been on the table for a while. We are monitoring it, and we will interface with that debate if it's to find traction. But it's an issue that is not lost to us, because we have to monitor that. We do have working relationships with the department at national, provincial, even at a local level. We just need to tie down that the operational component of and synchronize the delivery of smart card IDs with registration efforts. In fact, what we, you know, as a matter, as an issue for future, what we have to consider is upon application for a smart card, perhaps asking the applicants whether you'd like your information to immediately relate to the once citizenship is confirmed, your information to be related to the IC, so that the initial processes of voter registration can commence, and then there could be an approach by the IC through either email or SMS to activate your registration process. Teams between the department and ourselves are looking at what modalities could be implemented to do that, so that we create seamless and integrated operations regarding enlistment on the National Population Register and on the voter's roll. So it's still in the formative stages, but that's what we think the future should be. Having said that, Chair, as agreed, I will hand over to Mr. Shebori and Mr. Mosri to deal with the voters' role questions as well as the social media questions that have been put on the table. Thank you, Chair.
Well, thank you very much, CEO. Did I understand you to say that the CFO does not need to respond to any comments or questions?
From the questions that I had noted, it was just the issue of the leasing of the building that related to her component. But if you have a minute, by all means, Chair, we can give the CFO an opportunity.
Okay, Mr. Shibori.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you, CEO. I'll deal with the voter role-based questions. And I think it's prudent that at the outset, we paint a context of 2021. And that is as follows. You'll recall that we had general voter registration on the 18th and the 19th of September. And immediately following that, a few hours on the 20th, it was the date on which the elections were to be proclaimed. So we had a matter of just hours to convert the registrations that we recorded on the 18th and 19th into details onto the voters' roll in a matter of few hours. Whereas before then, we had at least a month or 2 months in previous elections to do the same work. In that circumstance, we accepted in the past meetings in the committee that we encountered some challenges regarding the correctness or otherwise of some of those registered voters. However, we were able to recover that because on voting day, we had been able to place all those voters whose details were incorrectly recorded in segments not related to their places of ordinary residence onto the VMDs, so that when those people presented themselves at the base voting station, i.e. a voting station at which they applied for registration, their details will be on the VMD and they will not be franchised. They will be allowed to vote as if those were MEC 7 votes. So that's the first one. The second is that we're going to have to deal with this for a considerable period, i.e. allegations that people all of a sudden do not find themselves on the segment of the voters' roll at the stations at which they applied for registration. This is so because hitherto, a voter would present themselves at the voting station and their registration registration would be defaulted at that station. With the VMD, we now have the intelligence to facilitate the registration of a voter anywhere in the country where we encounter them. For example, a person who's ordinarily resident in Cape Town can register themselves in Johannesburg, but we won't register them against a segment of the voters' roll in Johannesburg because the VMD is address-driven. So the address determines the voting district and the segment of the voters' roll in which that person is placed. So we need a nuanced communication so that people are aware that while they can present themselves anywhere for application for registration, their registration will be driven by the address that they provided when they applied for registration. The third point to be made, Chair, is that since 2016, after CAM and FOPE orders at the Constitutional Court, we are now engaged in more meaningful work on maintaining segments of the voters' roll. We do this in order to ensure that each voter on the segment of the voters' roll, there's a relationship between their place of ordinary residence and the segment on which they belong. Additionally, the chief electoral officer is under obligation to ensure that where he becomes aware that a person's registration status has changed, he is under an obligation to update that registration details of the voter so that they reflect a segment that has a nexus with their ward of ordinary residence. The last point related to the voters' roll, Chair, is the question by Honourable Rose, if I'm not mistaken, that there is a stagnation on the voters' roll. For this year and the next year, we have a similar figure of registrations. And that is not a decline on the voters' roll, because for you to have 26.1 million people registered, you must factor in the rate at which the rate of mortality, and we, outside of the COVID period, the rate of mortality was between 30 and 35,000 deaths on the voters' roll each month. So we must first reverse those people that leave the voters' roll, register those new persons so that there is either a net increase so that you avoid a situation where you have a net decline on the voters' roll. Having said that, in a year linked to the election in 2024, the figure will be revised upwards to indicate that there will be a general voter registration and that there will be resources placed at our disposal to ensure that there is targeted and meaningful engagement with voters. However, in the period between elections, we must maintain a voter's roll from going into net decline. In other words, we must register more people than we lose on the voter's roll so that the voter's roll will remain at that figure of 26.1 million voters. Thank you, CEO. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much, Mr. Moser.
Good morning, Chair. Minister and Deputy Minister, Commissioners. On social media, we have indeed learned our lessons. It's obviously not the first election that we had social media in our space, 2016, 2019, as well as 2021.
The approach that we have taken in engaging social media, which we are taking forward, one is to form a working relationship with the platforms themselves. We have a framework that we have developed, which assists in managing what kind of information is on their platforms, as well as looking at their own governance policies to manage information within their platforms. Secondly, we have taken an approach in three parts on working in social media. One is obviously posting for information, placing things for information on these platforms. Secondly, we have placed information here to educate those who are using and utilizing these platforms. And lastly, reporting on some recent developments in the space of election. In a nutshell, as a commission, we have embraced the existence of social media, and we are now engaged in creating the necessary capacity to efficiently manage it and always remain topical and on key information issues on these platforms. And part of that is appropriately resourcing our capacity here, as well as enhancing the framework, our own internal framework on how we post. And certainly the one or two negative posts that we had done in the last year, we learned quite a lot on what would be ordinary speak in communities is not necessarily appropriate for an institution like ours. We are obviously concerned with the amounts of misinformation and disinformation that are on these platforms. And to that extent, the indication by the CEO of a continental framework on engagement of social media by electoral management bodies is a key development, which we hopefully believe that it will help us as a country to also develop that kind of framework together with the partnership we formed with the platforms. So we continue to work in this space and utilize this space, but it doesn't take us off the traditional media, where we continue to engage with print, with online and digital publications, as well as radio as a major communication platform for ourselves and reaching almost every corner of the country. Now, we learned as well that most of the negative occurrences post that we experienced during the last election were in many ways encouraged or supported by political parties and political leaders. And together with the platforms, we actually started to do training workshops on the best utilization of these platforms. And indeed, the platforms are responding positively, and some of those training sessions have taken place. And there's a commitment throughout the period of this financial year to do those training sessions with party activists and party personnel. Now, the total of 18,000 activities of civic education that we are targeting for this financial year, when we place before you a map of where we are reaching in the country, you will be able to note that we reach every ward in the country. We have just about over 4,000 wards in the country, and we are able to reach every ward in the country through our approach of these 18,000 events that we've planned for this financial year. Yes, we may exceed this number. If you note our previous reports and APPs, you would have picked up that the number dropped drastically from 2020 owing to the emergence of the COVID-19 environment and the related restrictions. And based on the experience of 2020 and 2021, we have a way of now encouraging these face-to-face engagements with our communities, including using different virtual platforms for these engagements to take place. Obviously, when you go to rural areas, you can't use technology to a large extent. On the last issue, Chair, the school's democracy program is not new. It is partnership with basic education, and we visit schools throughout the year and support the implementation of the curriculum. And as we do so, we do partner with Home Affairs in some of the areas, and we are able to capture learners for registration to be on the voters' roll. We are now comfortably assisted by the VMD to ensure that we are able to register those learners in real time. That's about it, Chair. Thank you.
Well, thanks very much, Mr. Mosseri. CFO, is there any other issue you want to comment on?
Chair, I'm pretty covered with the CEO. Thank you.
Thank you very much, CEO, with your team. Commissioner Love?
Thanks, Chairperson. Just a couple of issues, and then I'm going to ask my fellow commissioners to come in on a few matters that they would want to comment on. But with regard to the civic education space, I think that that Mr. Mosseri has covered some of the engagement with schools and the Department of Home Affairs, but there was a question from Honourable Van der Merwe about the universities. And just to say, the rollout of the engagement at tertiary institutions not only does not only include the two universities that were mentioned, but also there's a very strong emphasis on the technicons and other places of tertiary education in addition to all of the universities. So we're happy to give more information on that at a later stage. The second thing I just wanted to sort of comment on in relation to issues around the nexus of registration and low voter turnout. I mean, I think that a lot of the low voter turnout is also linked to a broader issue of democracy education and the possibility for the commission to engage for a protracted period of time with expansion staff and additional staff in preparation for any election. And unfortunately, as the CFO has mentioned, our resources have really become less instead of more in that regard. And it really does have an impact. It means that the extent to which we are able to have people who, some of whom have worked with us before, but others are part of a community of people that we even want to bring into the fold of electoral operations and democracy education. These are people whose own training period is lesser than it used to be able to be. And secondly, numbers are fewer. And so I think that there's there is a real challenge there, and I don't want to dismiss it, but I do think we're putting before the committee the realities of that challenge. I think in your engagements with communities, for example, around the changes in the Electoral Act, I think you've also seen that in the responsiveness sometimes takes a lot of mobilization in advance and on the ground. And sometimes we need the capacities in place to do that. So just with those additions, I thought maybe then I can ask firstly Commissioner Moeta if he wants to come in relation to various issues in particular registration. Commissioner Moeta?
Commissioner Moeta?
Thank you. Thank you, Chairperson. Thank you, Vice Chair. I'd like to thank everyone present, the Minister and everyone, the members. I think in relation to voter registration, two things. One is that with the advent of the introduction of the voter management device, the concern raised that voters will discover or have discovered on voting day that the voter registration details had changed is something we will and have attended to. In the by-elections that we have held post the local government elections of last year, this is evident. Members will recall that part of the legislative amendment related to ensuring that when we register voters, their details will in fact be communicated as soon as possible to them, and that they will then be able to follow through on the registration information that they got in relation to what is recorded on the voters' roll. We have seen a number of voters whose details have been changed in that manner using the time frame that Parliament has approved for voters to inspect the voters' roll, and for those that object, to object accordingly. And so the point we want to underscore is that where in the past voters could be registered, that their addresses would be captured, because we do that immediately, it is no longer possible to have voters registering and their details not being updated by the Commission or being missed after the registration process. There is a very high correlation between voter registration and the persons registering on the voters' roll. In other words, an election happening and voters registering in the period between elections. When there are no general elections, as the CEO has indicated, the registration is very low. But when the general election is impending, we find that that process increases. And therefore, the relationship between voter registration and a general election is significant. And lastly, we want to say that given that that correlation is high, we find that objections, additions and corrections to the voters' roll significantly increase in the period leading to an election. Thank you very much, Chairperson.
Thank you.
Thanks, Chairperson. I think also just to add to that, we really would encourage members and any organizations that you encounter to take up the call of click, check and confirm your details, even if there's no election, let alone a by-election. It's something that is an ongoing thing, and we really encourage that to happen. So I wanted to ask Dr. Masuku whether she would want to come in relation to any matter, particularly issues to do with the kind of research that underscores much of the work that we do in the education and democracy education space. Dr. Masuku?
Thank you very much, Vice Chairperson. Thank you very much to the Chairperson, to the Honourable Chair, to the Minister, the Deputy Minister, and all Honourable Members. Just one thing I think that I'd like to highlight that links our research and especially civic education. Research is telling us that South Africa, like most African countries, have got a very, very large number of youth, what is called the youth bulge. And so what the CFO was saying about underscoring our pressure point is that as less resources become available to the Electoral Commission, what that means is that we are able to reach what we call captive audiences. So the people that are in tertiary institutions, the people that are in basic education. But we have a serious problem with the youth that are out of any of those systems. You need more resources in order to reach out to those people. So for the Electoral Commission, that is one of the challenges I think that we face, is to how to network much more effectively so that we can reach out with the little resources that we have to young people that are outside the captive audiences that we have, and to do so quite often and to persuade those people, those young people, to get onto the voters' roll. What we do know is that when you do get them on the voters' roll, they normally turn up to vote. That is my only addition, Vice Chairperson. Thank you very much.
Thanks. Back to you, Chairperson. Thank you very much to you and honourable members.
Thank you very much for your responses on the issues that were raised by honourable members. I'm going to invite Deputy Minister, then the Minister, to make comments. Then we step off the item. Deputy Minister.
No, thanks, Chair. I think I've been covered more particularly around the issue of the use of mobile units. I think the responses were sufficient. Thank you.
Thank you, DM. Minister?
Yeah, thank you, Chair. I am really satisfied, but I just want to make one comment about the resources that it's a very difficult area because as Home Affairs, one is still lobbying for Treasury to increase the political party so that political parties must not depend on donors, as you know. The reason for the Political Party Funding Act was to make political parties self-sufficient so that they don't get influence. Now, at the same time, IEC wants more to do their work. So it's quite a balancing act. But from my side, on the Home Affairs side as Minister, I think the lobbying I'm doing very strongly, not to undermine IEC, is to increase Political Party Funding Act so that is the political parties themselves that have got the power and capacity to mobilize, especially young people, to get interested in politics and participate in democracy. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. Minister, thanks very much, Deputy Commissioner Love, and your entire team for the continuous good work you have demonstrated and continue to demonstrate in the work of the IEC. And thanks very much, the CEO and executive, for the good work. And I think it's appreciation of all honorable members that they have observed the good work that you'll continue doing, but also to take a recommendation that are coming from the portfolio committee at all time. We really appreciate the work that both the committee and yourselves, we collectively work towards making sure that the objectives of the IEC are achieved. And want to thank you, members of the IEC team. We're going to step off this item and invite the public government printing works to present to the committee. And I'm going to invite the minister to introduce the government printing works, and we'll invite the CEO. Thanks very much, team IEC. Minister?
Thank you very much once more, Chairperson. Thank you very much to the Deputy Minister, and also we thank the IEC team. I'm sure, Chairperson, you might remind them that they don't have to stay. The IEC team doesn't have to stay. I'm sure they've got a lot of work, unless they wish so. I'm just trying to lobby for them. Yeah.
Oh, okay. Sorry, Minister, can I invite the Deputy Commissioner Love for a closing remark? And then if they had to step off the meeting, they will be allowed. Deputy Commissioner Love?
Thanks very much, Chairperson. Thank you, Minister. We really appreciate the time your committee gives us. We know you've got a very busy schedule, and we will bid you farewell, and we hope you have successful deliberations going forward. Thanks.
No, thanks very much, Deputy Commissioner Love. Members may stay, or they may decide to step off the meeting. Minister, thanks very much. You are now invited to introduce the government printing works. Thank you.
Yeah, Chairperson, when we started meeting, in making introductions, I mentioned that the DG of Home Affairs is also in the system. I just want to apologize on his behalf. I have to tell him to get somewhere. The Minister of Finance wanted certain reports, which are very much important for the department. I said she must step off the pedal, and she's no longer with us. So we have got the CEO of the government printing works with the staff. I thought he has introduced them, Chairperson, when we started this meeting. I'm wondering whether we must do introductions again, or should you just shoot on, realizing that we have lost a lot of time. I'm asking for your guidance in that regard.
No, thanks, Minister. I think we can proceed with the records in their attendance. We've already run of the records of those that need to be introduced. At least the government printing works have already been introduced. Thanks, Minister.
Yeah, thank you very much, Chairperson. The CEO is going to take you through the report. However, I just want to make remarks about a few important things, especially the key project. The first thing is that I'm sure honorable members will be asking a question about the investigation that has been done, if you remember, the task team or the tribunal, which was chaired by the former advisor to President Thabo Mbeki, Advocate Muyango Gumbi, who later on gave it to Mr. Malavi, because she was involved in the July uprising report. Now that the report has been given, she's back, and they are finalizing the report. I'm quite confident that if you were to call me next week, we'll be able to provide the report for you. If I may remind you, it was a report about the system down, how the systems there collapsed, such that we could not even get records, so financial records, in order to deal with audits by the Auditor General. I think sometimes next week we'll be ready with that report. It will have been finalized. Chairperson, the second thing I want to mention, we mentioned to you many times about our foray into SADC countries, that we would like a facility as big as the government printing works, being the only facility of its own kind on the whole of the continent, as far as we are concerned, to serve the continent. As we said, many people on our continent are depending on the colonial masters or European countries, former colonial masters, to print their identity documents. We have been talking to them, and I think the CEO is going to give you progress on that, because we have made quite extensive, and as far as I'm concerned, impressive progress in our foray into the continent, especially, let me say SADC rather than the continent. even though we are talking to the whole continent, but most of our forays are within SADC, and I would like to outline the progress in that regard. I will also mention the issue of the organizational structure, which has been a problem for quite a long time. As you know, you have warned us many times about vacancies and acting positions. I want to report today that we have made tremendous progress as far as I'm concerned, because luckily, after a lot of toing and froing between the government printing works and the Department of Public Service and Administration, eventually there's a new organizational structure, which is in terms of the new service delivery model at government printing works. That organizational structure has eventually been approved by the Minister of Public Service and Administration and myself, and we have started populating that organizational structure. I would like the CEO to give you the progress about the posts that are being filled and the posts that are about to be filled and those which have been filled already. And lastly, Chairperson, the issue of the master plan project, which becomes even more important if our forays into SADC is anything to go by. Because once you have got many countries who want to do business with government printing works, you will also like to have a good infrastructure and a lot of staff to be able to carry on that work. So the issue of the master plan is still a sore point, because while we have made strides in that treasury has finally given and intervened and given the government printing works a three-year deviation, not to use public works, but rather to use the DBSA, the Development Bank of South Africa, to deliver this very needed and important master plan. We still have a lot of technical glitches between us and the Department of Public Works. There is slowness in them signing documents and allowing to give the project over. It is the frustrating part of this, but I think the CEO will also brief you as far as that is concerned. But we are happy that eventually Treasury has given us that deviation, that Development Bank of South Africa can be used for this project, which has delayed, and we believe once it's in the hands of the Development Bank, it will move very fast. Within the next 3 years, we'll be able to deliver a state-of-the-art building, which is befitting to the work that government printing works is doing. Thank you, Chairperson. I'll give over to the CEO. To take us through the report.
Thank you very much, Minister. CEO Fosse.
Thank you very much, Honorable Chairperson, Minister, Honorable Members of the Portfolio Committee, Members of the Executive Committee from GPW, as well as the colleagues from the IEC, DHA. Good morning. Firstly, let me appreciate the support from this Portfolio Committee that has made an effort to come to the GPW so that they can also have the appreciation of the challenges that are being experienced and provided their support together with the Minister and the Deputy Minister and our colleagues. It is really humbling, and we really appreciate that. Today, together with the members of EXCO, we are tabling the APP for Government Printing Works, which is a government component whose mandate is to provide state security printed material, and it reports directly under the Minister, with DHA being our main customer. I need to just preface the presentation by indicating that we have a total of 18 targets, which we have agreed to at an organizational level where we had a rigorous process of engaging staff members bottom up as well as top down. And those sessions were held with various members to make sure that there's buy-in and collective effort in attaining progress towards achievement of targets. The targets as well as this APP are aligned to our current strategic plan, as well as the revised medium-term strategic framework, so that they become realistic. The set targets have considered the challenges brought about by the COVID pandemic, as well as the global wars, which have recently kicked in and have posed a risk towards the manufacturing production, as well as delivery of our equipment, as well as paper. So we have considered that to make sure that our targets became realistic and we are able to implement them over this financial year as well as the coming two financial years. We actually recently held our strategic alignment session internally where all management engaged on our targets and they endorsed them. Chairperson, honorable members, I will be co-presenting with some of the members of EFSCO on specific slides, and let me move to the next one. This APP outlines all our indicators as well as our performance targets that we had set out for ourselves, as well as I've already indicated, to achieve priorities that we have set for ourselves. We contribute towards the NDP priorities and our work is aligned to the NTSF, and those are the four priorities: building a capable, ethical and developmental state, economic transformation and job creation, social cohesion and safe communities, as well as a better African world. We contribute towards this MTS priorities through specific commitments that we had made up for ourselves, and they have also translated into the targets which are now being presented in today's session. We thought it would be important just to refresh our memories on the priorities that we're working towards achieving over the MTSF period, and they have been restated in this APP. We continue to reposition our business to ensure stability, sustainability, and viability because we are a critical national state security entity. We strive to improve customer experience through timers, quality, and quantity management. In a nutshell, we need to produce according to quality and the quantity that the client requires. We continue to invest on our sound financial management system, as well as the facilities that we have to ensure that the business actually sustains itself. We continue to implement the long-term vision, which is that of 2030, to be a mandatory state security player in the region. We continue to recruit, retain, and develop GPW's workforce to make sure that we meet market and client demands, and we have an agile workforce that is able to deliver on those demands. And finally, we have mentioned, the minister has mentioned in the opening remarks, the upgrade of our facilities to ensure overall effective management of our operations. Just to move to the breakdown of these targets on the next slide briefly, a total of 18 targets broken down as follows: Office of the CEO, which includes internal audit as well as ICT, has 3 targets. Branch operations and production has 5 targets. Strategic management 4, financial services 4, and human resources 2. Just to take members through the targets individually, as indicated in the slides, let's go to the next slide. Next one. Okay. I'm going to start with the office of the CEO, and as I've indicated, ICT becomes the first unit that we talk to. We strive to have 100% security vulnerabilities detected by security assessments and ensure that they are also mitigated. As a state security printer, we cannot afford any vulnerabilities against our environment, so we have made sure that all the elements that we need to put in place are in place, and the system make sure that we protect our firewalls against any attacks to make sure that all the security threats are actually mitigated by the financial year and the next 2 months. the next target. We also strive to have 95.5% server uptime availability. And the reality is that our members will recall previously we had 100% in terms of uptime server availability. In line with the ITIL framework, we then consulted and realized that 100% would be impossible to attain, in particular because there are external dependencies like load shedding, power failures, as well as system downtime that may actually have an impact on the availability of our networks. And as a result, we then, in line with industry standards, adopted the 95.5% uptime availability. We then go to the next one, which is in the internal audit environment. We have an audit committee that sits on a quarterly basis, and this plan has already been presented to them, and 90% of that audit plan is going to be implemented. And the reason why we have 90% is because of the internal and external audits, particularly because we strive for 100%, but based on experience, we realize that we can actually implement the plan in totality, but there will be dependencies that would compromise the total achievement of the plan, ranging from the system downtime that may actually impact on the finalization of some of the audit findings. But we strive for 100% irrespective. Branch operations and production, which is our core branch, has a number of critical targets. GPW remains the back office for the Department of Home Affairs, where we print the state critical documents such as IDs, passports, and certificates. Our first target is to ensure that 100% of what we shall have received from Home Affairs is actually delivered in line with their specifications, and that should happen throughout the quarters of the financial year. The second target is on travel documents, which are passports. 100% of received documents from Home Affairs should also be delivered in line with the quality that has been specified. The third one pertains to the examination paper, which also produced for higher education, Department of Basic Education, as well as the provincial departments, as well as higher education itself. So we make sure that what we receive from those stakeholders, we print the quantity as well as the quality that the client has dictated to us. Further, we are responsible for the printing of the government gazette, which should be published in terms of the specifications from our customers. This is an area that I need to indicate in the previous financial year had been adversely affected by the system downtime, but we have, in actual fact, together with the tender process themselves, the tender module itself, we have appointed a service provider that is on board to make sure that we re-automate our government gazette website, and they should be able to access the website from all walks of life like they have been before, as well as the tender module. We've been collaborating with Treasury, particularly on the tender module, to make sure that contingency measures are in place so that government is not adversely affected on the access of tenders. But on the government gazette or e-gazette website, we are actually having a provider that is helping us with that. And as soon as the process is completed, we should be able to get back online. Currently, we have been processing manually despite the technical glitches that we've been having, but we have been managing to process as required. The next one is the high security certificates. Over time, customers would approach GPW and say they want to build layers of security on their certificates due to the fraud and risk-based challenges that they've experienced. So a number of products have actually been produced for various entities. This includes our firearm licenses, amongst others, as well as other high security certificates. So we ensure that whatever has been delivered to GPW, we produce the quality as well as the quantity that is desired. Strategic management is our next branch, where we have marketing as well as security and legal services. We have 8 provincial customer engagement sessions that have been started. Members, honourable members will recall that this is a target that we have carried since the previous financial year. The importance of the sessions is for us to go and engage with our customers, get their perceptions, get their view of how we are doing out there. And based on the customer feedback, we then have a clear plan and implement the recommendations and take on the complaints and address them accordingly. To the effect that we have introduced the Back to Basics committee internally, that is meant to literally go through each and every customer complaint as well as the compliments that have been received and make sure that they are addressed and members get feedback accordingly. So we continue with those in this financial year, and we have two in each quarter, just to make sure that customers get the excellent experience from GPT. In the opening remarks by Minister, we have that we will be continuing our journey into expanding our footprint further, and this is one of the key critical projects for GPT, because we want to ensure that in countries where we don't have a presence, we at least have a foot in the door by beginning to engage with the various stakeholders that are in the country as well as abroad. And we make sure that some of them come to our facility to come and do with an intention of printing with us. We are going to engage two countries per region. Some of these have already been engaged. It's just follow-up engagements just to make sure that they don't forget about us. And when the contract with their colonial masters end, they know that GPW exists and they can come and train us. In view of the technical challenges that we've had previously, we thought we should prioritize business continuity because we cannot afford not to continue operating as an entity. And therefore, we have a business continuity management plan which has been put together. We started the journey in the previous financial year. So all the activities are risk-based, and we ensure that in each and every quarter, the targets that have been set out will be achieved just to make sure that we sustain our operations. The next target in this branch talks to the security model that we would like to put in place. We also had a journey that started last year in this regard, consulted with entities such as South African Reserve Bank, South African Bank Notes, SA Mint, and as well as other national key points, so that we can benchmark ourselves against the state of the art security equipment that they have. And indeed, we have learned a lot from such entities, and they have shared their models and we have incorporated them. So that is actually the basis of our security upgrades within GPW, so that we can then improve and enhance the security that we have. The next branch is financial management. This is a branch that has also set, I think, four targets, one being the striving to have the unqualified audit opinion in the 2021-2022 financial year. We are aware that there are dependencies, system uptime being one, as well as resolution of the findings. And therefore, we need to make sure that on a weekly, monthly, quarterly basis, we track progress in this regard. And the tools are in place to mitigate further risks. Next to that, we're going to be submitting our in-year monitoring report, but the major one being the annual financial statements, which the first set is due end of May 2020. And then the subsequent ones can be implemented at a later stage. We have developed a post-audit action plan as well as the audit matrix that is tracked on a weekly basis at EXCO, just to make sure that we don't lose sight of all the findings and ensure that they are resolved. The three positive capital working ratio has been implemented since previous financial years and is being maintained just to make sure that our capital ratio remains constant. The net profit margin, we strive to remain at 10%, and the CFO will actually elaborate further on this matter in his presentation together with the previous one. I'm going to move to the last target under finance, which is basically the submission of the in-year monitoring report as well as the financial statements I have mentioned. The last branch that I'm going to talk to is human resources. As our contribution towards the MTSF priority of economic transformation and job creation, DPW has actually set this target. It's an MTSF target, which is going to be implemented over a 5-year period. We started this journey in 2020-2021, and we're going to continue into towards the end of this MTSF period. What we have planned to do is to appoint 100 unemployed graduates and young artisans over the MTSF period, as it appears in our strategic plan. However, in each financial year, we plan to appoint 20. At this point, I need to actually indicate a bit of progress in this regard, that we have a total of 55 unemployed graduates that have already been appointed against the target of GPW, as well as 30 apprentices. So indeed, we are making strides, and we hope to make sure that we appoint more. Some of these have already been absorbed and appointed within GPW so that they can come and add value. However, others have been appointed externally. We also want to sharpen the saw and make sure that our workforce is agile and able to adapt to the demands of the labor market. So 60% of our total workforce is going to be trained in line with the priorities that you've identified in our workplace skills plan. I'm going to pause, Honorable Chairperson, through your indulgence, and hand over to the CFO at this point to present the budget of GPW. Thereafter, I will then continue with the update on GPW. Through you, Chairperson, if the CFO can present. Thank you.
Thanks very much, CFO.
Thank you, Chair, Minister, and members. I'm going to talk through the slide, and I'll touch on some selling points within the slide. The one that you see is for the E&E 2023, is that the total sales has actually come down from 1.4 billion to 1.3 billion. Essentially, we worked in the scenario planning by the Department of Home Affairs in terms of their volumes. And we based the total sales on that, and also keeping in mind that we have passed on some level of discount back to DHA to also kind of assist with their budget cuts. And in general, that came to about 10 rand on ID cards and 50 rand on passports, and that equates to around 10%, if you like, a discount or a reduction of price. The cost of sales, you will appreciate, does move together with sales, but there are some aspects within the cost of sales, like your employee costs, that stay stagnant. And that's why you will see that over the 2 years, the gross profit margin then reduces from 36% to 34%, mainly because of that reason. I can also just mention, Jay, that the net profit calculation sitting at 10% at the moment for both the outer financial years is basically as a result of a guidance from a national treasury that, firstly, as a component, and keeping in mind that we are self-revenue generating, we cannot necessarily budget for a loss as it stands. So the guidance is that we need to look at a 10% profit margin or net profit margin. And I must say we have significantly gone through all the expenses and also to see where cost cutting could be implemented to be able to achieve this 10%. And actually that came to us that we had to reduce quite a number of budgets in terms of professional services, administrative services, our equipment, and together with that depreciations. And also had to factor in a number of foreign exchange variability within it. So, Chair, although we've looked at the volumes of the DHA, we also looked at our advertising sales, our contract printing, our credential cards, as well as our general printing, and we have factored in scenarios of escalations of between 5.5% and 7% on those sales, in an attempt to ensure that we reach the 10% surplus margin as guided. Our material usage does is pro rata to our revenue to a large extent, and also to our contract printing. So we have a number of contract printing tenders that have been assigned, and we, as we get requests, we then assign those tenders to the contract printing database, if you like, and that material usage is then a factor of that orders received from departments. The other consideration, Chair, within this budget was, and I think Minister and CEO spoke to it, is in terms of our assets and in terms of our master plan, as well as our APSA building, and most of those expenditures will come from our retained earnings. And although we also want to protect our retained earnings to some extent for any unforeseen events, there is an amount within that retained earnings that will be allocated towards CapEx, and in particular fixed assets and asset replacements. And that amount in the next financial year should amount to about 300 million at least for asset replacements, and also lease improvements of about 200 million. Those are the big items within that budget. Chair, the other point that I think needs to be made on this is that the employee benefits, you will see, stays consistent to a large extent from the current to the next financial year. But as you will see from the next two slides that we do, as Minister and CEO said, we've embarked on the organizational structure, and you can then see from there the increase into the 2024 financial year. The implementation of the structure, I think we've agreed that it should not be kind of a big bang approach. And at the moment, we're looking from a budget point of view to about a 3 to 5 year implementation of the structure. But we'll have to be very, very sure as well that we're able to maintain our revenue streams as we go along. And this is why I think the SADC initiative is important. I can speak briefly just to two things, two other things. The first one, I spoke about a 10% net profit margin and why we're maintaining that. The other issue that the CEO mentioned was the positive working capital ratio. Essentially, that is the assets that we have available to service our short-term debts. The value is about, well, we're looking at a ratio of about 3 now, 3 positive working capital ratio. We are maintaining it to a large extent at the moment. We do not have any significant debts that are not being paid. We're servicing all our debts as we stand, and also within the PFMA 30-day period. We obviously monitor our bank balances consistently on a weekly and even daily basis, and our bank balance has stayed consistent, which makes us a definite going concern as it stands now, and we are able to deal with all our liabilities at the moment. So, Chair, I'm going to leave it at that for the budget. Thank you.
Thank you very much, CEO.
Okay. Chairperson, members, thank you very much. Let me proceed. We thought it would be prudent for us at this point to give an update on the critical projects that we have previously reported to the on. The first one being our expansion of the footprint into the SADC market. We have actually been continuing to engage, as I've already indicated, and so far 8 countries have been engaged in Eswatini, Botswana, Lesotho, Zambia, Malawi, DRC, Kenya, and Zimbabwe. Just a little breakdown on the key milestones. The first country that I would like to talk to is Namibia. In terms of Namibia, our key customer there is the Ministry of Home Affairs and Immigration. Is the next slide. Please. In the next slide, we see that the first customer is actually the Ministry of Home Affairs and Immigration. Progress in this regard, we've already signed an SLA with the Ministry of Home Affairs to concretize our working relationship. To date, we have produced and delivered 660,000 copies of the Namibian birth certificate to Windhoek on the 6th of April 2022. And further engagements led to the country visiting us on the 15th and 16th of March, where a new product was added to our portfolio, which is a refugee permit. So the textile team is actually working on that so that we can produce the document for them. Second country is Eswatini. We have two customers there, University of Eswatini, as well as the Council of Exams. And so far we have printed the certificates for the university, Good Shepherd College, as well as the 1,435 university certificates and 29 Royal Eswatini Police Services certificates printed. So this is a country that has huge potential, and we continue to engage it so that we can actually capture more of the entities or departments to come and print with us. Kenya is our Somalia is the next one. And they actually came to GPW in February, and they wanted two things. Firstly, they have a government printing press which is not as operational due to previous wars. So they wanted to resuscitate that, and they also wanted a strategic partnership with GPW so that we can print some of their security documents. So engagements are still continuing in this regard. The next critical stakeholder is the Kenyan government press. An MOU has already been concluded at the country level in December. And at the departmental level, we've then developed an SLA, which we have already concretized. They actually came recently, and the technical teams are already engaging on the specific movements that needs to be produced for the country. In addition, I'm just going to say other countries, we continue to engage with them, and the delegation has been invited to come. Others are offering to actually come. Lesotho, Ethiopia, as well as the DRC have actually engaged us, and some of them have come to us. And what we have adopted from it to assist GPW sustainability, we've adopted an approach of submitting tender documents to bid for printing jobs in other countries as well. And this indeed, once it materializes, will assist in replenishing our revenue stream. And we will be actually doing more of such so that GPW can continue to be. So more countries will be coming in the next few months, and so that we can. The next project is the organizational structure. And the next slide. The next critical project, as Minister has already outlined we have the structure now approved by both the Minister as well as the Minister of DPSA, who has concurred with the structure once the Minister approved it. We have started with the filling of critical posts within the organization. And this is post consultation with all officials, the management level, as well as organized labor. And we hope that it will actually bring about the much needed capacity, particularly in the areas of ICT and finance, where we have been very thinly spread, to make sure that we are better positioned to have an agile workforce that is able to keep up with the trends in the printing industry, as well as investing in areas such as R&D. Currently, we are seeing on our officials that are supposed to help us with R&D. In terms of an update on the freedom of actual, I need to indicate that a recruitment drive is already underway to fill the due to the agency of this structure in the next slide. So far, we have prioritized the ICT environment. We've prioritized posting the ICT environment. I need to report that as we present today, four specialists are starting now in May, have already been appointed, and the interviews for the CIO were conducted last week Friday on the 29th of April, and we are making an appointment in that regard. Stability in that environment is of utmost importance so that we can be able to sustain our operations as well. We are in the process of appointing the Director of Legal Services, and another positive addition to our structure is the Director of Facilities Management, who has started on the 1st of April. As we finalize the master plan and the new head office, that resource is going to be critical to help us manage the project internally as well. So the implementation plan is underway, and more posts are going to be filled within the financial year. Critical is the senior management post at the level of a DDG. We previously had one post of general manager operations and production. With the new structure and the proposals as we're engaging DPSA, we split the two positions. One is sort of a factory manager who focuses on manufacturing and engineering. Another one focuses on ops management, as well as the DDG corporate services. JE has already been conducted in the previous week on this post, and they're going to be advertised in May so that we can move it towards filling them. The critical project that I would like to also touch on is the master plan, which the sector referred to in the opening remarks, and we need to actually indicate that as we present today, the latest we received as of this morning is that DPWI are still finalizing the memorandum of agreement, which is to be sent to the acting DG of Fast. Indeed, these delays have been impacting negatively on the project to a point where at some point the minister also signed a letter of escalation to Minister Jalil so that we can attain progress through that intervention. However, on the positive note, the MOA has reached the final stages because DBSA has already provided their input, and DPWI is then yet to have it approved internally. We've engaged critical stakeholders such as Dr. Sputa Ramoko of Infrastructure SA to intervene. The DG of Home Affairs has also came in to intervene. We've basically amassed all the resources just to make sure that we push progress in this regard. I've also been engaging the acting DG of DPWI just to make sure that on a weekly basis I get an update. So they are aware that there's pressure that from our side to finalize this project, so they really need to proceed. We have obtained a deviation through National Treasury to utilize DBSA as an implementing agent for 3 years. So this process is just awaiting DPWI to finalize the technical process so that we can move. Through the director facilities, we're going to engage further on the project plan just to make sure that implementation takes place. The same process will be adopted for the new head office, which is the APSA building, which is opposite our current building in Kisafe Street. We have already approached National Treasury so that DBSA can actually focus on two of the projects, because the precinct approach that we have adopted. So one is adjacent to the other. It doesn't make sense to have another service provider operating on the other one and then the DBSA on the other. So we thought if we can consolidate the effort, then we can have one implementing agent for both of them to actually assist us with the migration to the new head of services to the section. It is important that we recognize the risks which in GPW are recognized from the planning process up to the implementation. We've got five key risks which appear in our strategic risk register that we thought we should also flag at this point and indicate the mitigating plans, because therein lies the maturity level of the organization to actually resolve its audit findings, to manage its internal controls and improve its overall governance. An entity that has no regard of the country is going to fail. So it's important that we also update the committee on this. Our readiness to execute the project of appointment of young women as well as the youth as well as women has taken a center stage, as I've actually referred to earlier on. However, we realize that we can't appoint all of them at once, because anyone can ask, why are you chunking it into 5 years when you could have appointed more? Because you seem to have capacity and capability to do so. We need to accommodate all those people, the young people, the women, artisans, as well as professionals. So we go into, as we finalize the master plan and the new head office, make sure that head office, make sure that we provide for space for this to come in and actually work for GP. The second one is basically the failure to secure paper for production purposes, as well as secure printing material. Earlier in my opening remarks, I also mentioned the fact that COVID-19 as well as the global wars have the risk that of impacting on the timers, manufacturing, production, as well as the delivery of paper and our equipment. So we have deliberately put this as one of the critical risks, but we are investing, of course, in the research and development so that we monitor the trends, we engage stakeholders abroad, and make sure that before each product is either discontinued or produced, DPW can actually be informed so that it can inform key decision making on our consumables. And that we also consult with Printing SA internally, because we are also a member of Printing SA, just to make sure that that collaboration happens. We also intend to move more into the digital space. Digitization has been primary in line with the 4IR. So this is one of our strategic intents, just to make sure that the printing of our state security documents is stopped by this time. The next one is value for money on the training programs. We've mentioned that 60% of our workforce needs to be trained. We just need to ensure return on investment of course trained, and we are evaluating. And the last two is to make sure that we implement governance, including risk as well as audit findings, to make sure that we move towards a clean governance state of affairs, as well as a clean audit. An audit matrix has been put in place. I need to indicate that we have introduced a new committee called Internal Controls Committee to track progress in terms of how effective our internal controls, and to make sure that we strengthen our governance. So this remains an standing item at EXCO and MEMCO meetings, and on a weekly basis, EXCO monitors the implementation of the matrix. Finally, in terms of security, we have, as indicated, been consulting with critical stakeholders, and we have a structure called JPC, which is a Joint Planning Committee, which is introduced by the National Key Point, chaired by myself, where we meet on a quarterly basis to make sure that the security of the national entity is actually state of the art, and we intend to improve our security in line with the model that is presented by those entities. Finally, the last two slides talk to our capacity and capability to resolve our audit findings. We have previously come to the committee and made an undertaking that by the time we present again, we shall have actually surpassed the 80% mark in terms of the resolution of all the repeats, as well as outstanding findings, both raised by internal audit as well as AGSA. I'm going to hand over to our Director of Internal Audit, Ms. Constance Shibambo, to actually present the last two slides, and then we'll move towards concluding presentation chapter for you. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Shibambo.
Thank you, Chairperson and members. Thanks, CEO. Can I have the previous slide? Yes, thank you. So management is still continuing to put more effort and commitment in addressing all our audit findings that have been raised between ourselves as internal audit as well as AGSA. As reflected from what CEO has said in enhancing our internal control environment overall within the organization. So the governance structures being the audit committee as well as the risk committee, which are separate, they also continue to give us advice in terms of how to address these issues as well in a concerted effort to ensure combined assurance. The implementation of the post-audit action plans in addressing this whole register of audit metrics as well has been put in place as has been indicated and monitored on a weekly basis through our EXCO meetings within the department. So to date, 80% of the audit findings from that metrics have been resolved or addressed by management within GPW in addressing both findings from internal audit as well as the Auditor General overall in all the branches that have been audited within the organization. And lastly, what I need to mention is that most of the findings that are actually being captured within that register, they are mainly from the ICT environment as well as from our financial services. But that being said as well, there has been strides and progress made in that regard in attaining the resolution of these findings in both the branches. We can move to the next slide. Thank you. So this is just a summary of how our findings are in as far as the overall organization by the end of the financial year. So within all the branches within the organization, we had about 548 findings. That is findings covering the period in the last five financial years. So these findings are a combination of both internal audit and external auditors. So to date, from the 548 findings, management have managed to resolve 436 findings, which have been resolved by management, and they're still going to be subjected to a review by AG while they are now on board and doing their audit in that regard. So that means that from that 436, 80% of our findings have been resolved to date. So we still have 20% to look into. Out of the 20%, 14% is already in progress. There are dependencies in some areas in terms of fully resolving some of these findings. So 14% management has already started working into the processes of resolving these findings. And we still have another 6% that still need to be attended to so that we can fully resolve all our 548 findings to date. Overall, that is where the status is. We've resolved 80% of the findings, and we're still working on the 20% to resolve these findings. Thank you very much, CEO. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much, CEO, and Ms. Shibambo, is that all?
Chairperson, thank you very much. This is where we rest our presentation. Thank you.
Thanks very much, CEO. Thanks very much with your team, EXCO members, for the presentations. I'm going to invite members to interact with their presentation. Honorable Lizen, Honorable Molekwa, Honorable Tito, Honorable Ross, and Honorable Pile. I have not identified other members who are not here. Yeah, I think those are our members who are in attendance. In that order, co-chair.
Thank you very much, Chairperson, and thank you very much to the Minister and also to the CEO. I think the Minister did touch on it, but I think a key issue, of course, of concern for this Oversight Committee is the fact that as much as we can set targets for performance going forward, we need, of course, to have a stable, healthy environment at the GPW. So I guess my first question would be, has stability returned to the organization, and has all the previous issues that were raised with us, have they been addressed? And specifically, I would be interested to know if the animosity between leadership and staff at the organization, whether that has been resolved. Because, of course, if we want to set targets and meet them going forward, we need happy and productive staff. So that would be my first question. With regard to the vacancies, I think it's still important that we do get a full list of the current vacancies and the timeframes to fill those. Of course, the CEO did speak to it and the Minister as well, but I think a full list of that information would be helpful for us. With regards to the presentation, CEO, in previous years, you gave us, I think in the last year, you gave us about 4 slides on your budget. This time around, you are not giving us a breakdown of your budget per program. And in fact, you've only given us 1 slide. And that really makes our oversight role impossible. So I would like to know why that was done this time around by not giving us a program breakdown, but and only that 1 slide. Also, there's a change in the target. 1 target, the 2021 target of effective and efficient internal corporate and governance to enable organizational performance relating to internal audit has changed its wording, and it now reads independent and objective assurance and consulting services provided. And it's not clear how internal audit relates to consultants, if we can just get more clarity on that. I would also maybe like to ask, with regards to the security model that was due to be implemented in 2021-2022, how did the crash of the IT system and its backup, with regards to the crash of the IT system and backup, why was it not picked up by the security model, which should have been implemented by that time? And also lastly, you speak about wanting to train 60% of the total workforce as per the critical VSP identified priorities. If you can just give us more clarity on what those VSP priorities are. And I will leave it at that. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you very much, Honorable Lizen. Honorable Molekwa.
Thank you very much, Chairperson.
Let me start by appreciating the report that's been presented by Government Printing Works. You also appreciate the progress insofar as SADC development projects are concerned. We hope that all the other countries will follow suit in making sure that they do business with Government Printing Works. We really appreciate the efforts took by the management in engaging those other countries who have already signed the memorandum of understanding. We also appreciate the progress on the audit outcome. We hope that the status quo will continue as being anticipated by Government Printing Works to continue to do the work and also attending to the issues raised by the Auditor General. We appreciate that most of the findings that were raised by the Office of the Auditor General were attended to. Chairperson would like to note and welcome the report as presented by the Government Printing Works. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Honorable Mulekwa, Honorable Tito.
Thanks very much, Chair, and greetings to everyone. And I will also like to appreciate the work that the Government Printing Work is been doing. And also, it's very good on what Ms. Fosi was saying, that they are making footprints in every SADC region all over in Africa. Now, Chair, my question is that we all know that we have 16 countries of the SADC, and then after that now, like the minister has spoken earlier on, that they are also busy trying to get other continents also to follow suit. And then how many continents has the minister tried to spoke to, and also is the response negative or positive? And then Can they just give us a clarity on that one? And then on the issue of the master plan, the minister was also talking about the slowness of the public works. And then are they putting pressure on them that they must sign those papers? Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much for your contribution, Honorable Tito, Honorable Rose.
Thank you, Chair, and to the minister and the officials of the GPW for the presentations. Chair, I'll rush through it. I have quite a few questions. First of all, on the 95.5% server uptime, that basically works out to about 3 weeks of downtime. What systems are affected by this, bearing in mind how long that is? And is the Government Gazette one of those systems that are affected by this downtime? Then you say that you are changing the target of the audit plan from 100% to 90% because you're suggesting that it's unrealistic. But in 2019-20, you achieved 100%. So you've just achieved 100%. I don't understand why you're saying it's unrealistic. Then on slide 23, which is a great concern, Chairperson, is that it says that in the financial year 20 and 21, the Government Printing Works achieved an unqualified audit opinion. But in 2020, they achieved a disclaimer with findings. And in 21, they had an outstanding audit. So I don't know how this happened, Chairperson, but this is of grave concern, this misrepresentation. And I'd like an explanation of it. Then in terms of key risks, we look at the failure to secure paper for the production of secure printed material. I just want to understand, in last year's APP, you mentioned that you were going to conduct research into acquiring your own paper mill and vertically integrating it, et cetera. What actually happened to that investigation? Did the investigation happen? Was it rejected, et cetera? If we can just get information on that. And then critically as well, Chair, I just want to understand, now we've had these recent arrests where the syndicates are able to produce secure documents. And my understanding was that the security paper is only accessible, or it can only be procured by a security printer. So I want to understand whether the Government Printing Works is seeing this as a risk. You know, where are these people getting this paper from, et cetera, and whether it's something they are investigating as a key risk to the integrity of the documents that they produce. And then finally, echoing the concern of Honorable Lazelle, particularly the balance sheet has been removed from this APP presentation. And so my question in terms of, a few direct questions that I would like answered is the trade and other receivables. What are the credit losses expected in, from this report, if we can get that? And then deferred income, what is the total of deferred income for this reporting period? Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much, Honorable Ross, for your contributions. Honorable Pile. Honorable Pile. Is Honorable Pile on the line?
President, I'm just checking in. It seems as if it's not on the system.
Okay.
Yeah.
Thanks very much, members, for your contributions and the issues that you raised. I think before the response, just on the few issues which we may need to follow them up. I think if you members recollect, there were some issues between the government printing works and the AG, and we also had to invite the AG on the separate space to interact with them. I think it's in line with the approach members are taking with the interest to check the governance stability at the government printing works. What perhaps may need to also to take note as the one of the issues we must follow up. I'm happy that you have said that you have 80% dealt with the findings, and also you are going to subject them to the review by the AG. I think this is an important front that we must ground our focus as the committee. We'll take that point seriously, and before we rise, Mr. Matonzi, we may need to invite government printing works to the committee so that we're able to track the progress on the issues that the AG have highlighted on their findings, so that we're able to monitor progress as we work on stability. The issue of the master plan, quite important. We've been dealing this matter in our previous session. In fact, since we came to office, there's been reported and there's been loggerheads, I can put it in that manner, between Home Affairs, Government Printing Works, and Public Works. And I think there has been correspondences of responses to us by the Minister of Home Affairs interacting with the Minister of Public Works. I think we've reached a stage, and I can sense the frustration the Minister has articulated, that there will be a need to interact with the Portfolio Committee of Public Works, particularly on this matter, that is recurring on the non-progress on the issues. I'm raising this because there's an appreciation of footprint in SADC. And if we had to evaluate capacity, the current capacity, with the continuous work that the Home Affairs and the Government Printing Works are conducting in relation to interface with the countries, I think Honorable Tito has raised that there are many countries that may need to be lobbied to interface with Government Printing Works. So if we don't have capacity in terms of hosting, and there's our own system as government minister, is delaying to transfer the functions in terms of making sure that this portfolio or this master plan is implemented. We'll take that step into our interest and make sure that we interact with the portfolio from Public Works, just to understand on their front what may be the difficulties with the ministry or the public works as an institution. Because I think there's a draw plan that government works as one. And I think that is expressed by the district development model that we need to enhance departments and all stakeholders. So we may need to make sure that this matter comes to rest. And in the next session, we get more progress on it. I'm sure that the minister, you're confirming that the report, the investigation report, will await it, because I'm sure it will come with the recommendations. And those recommendations, minister, which will be coming from your report, we're going to take interest that it must be implemented, because we're in a path to clean out in the manner you focus on cleaning out the system corruption within Home Affairs. We must take the same attitude once that report come to the portfolio committee. Honorable, I'm going to the last point which I want to raise also is on the organizational organogram that has been approved. I think if Ms. Fosi can expand more on that, and also support this, the Honorable Lizelle on the vacant posts that are there that must be submitted, or so that we take notes of the issues that we're raising with us. Honorable Play, I'm going to invite you, then we'll invite Ms. Fosi and the Ministry to respond. Honorable Play.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. My humble apologies. Just before I could speak, I got disconnected. But I see that you have covered it, Chair. I wanted to propose that there is a meeting with the Portfolio Committee on Public Works, particularly on this master plan to DBSA. I think it's important, it's imperative, it's long overdue, and it may be able to help the process be fast-tracked. And with that, I think we must also applaud and appreciate the achievements and the progress that has been made in GPW, especially since the appointment, and we've said this before, even during oversight, that once you create stability in an organization or institution, you would see how, you know, change evolves. And I think it's important to note that there has been significant progress made. But just to reiterate, Chair, we have to ensure that this meeting happens as soon as possible so that we can be able to fast track it. Thank you.
Thank you, Honorable. I'm going to invite Ms. Fosi, and you will then delegate, then I'll invite the ministry to respond or to make comments on some of the issues that members have raised. Ms. Fosi.
Thank you very much for the opportunity. Indeed, some of the ExCo members will be responding to some of the questions, mainly questions by Honorable Lizelle. I'm going to request GMHR, Ms. Michelle Modise, to respond to them, particularly those that are HR-related people issues, as well as dealing with folks. And then the CFO will take the finance-related questions as well, as well as those that are pertaining to the topic measures. Mr. Ben Woodley, the acting GM Ops, will take questions particularly on the operations related matters, the paper mill, as well as the arrest on the security paper. Ms. Shibamba will also take the issue of the internal audit. Let me perhaps start and respond to some of the questions, and then I think members will also come in and take that covered. Appreciating the input as well as the questions, because they will help us shape the organization going forward. In terms of the targets for internal audits and what internal audit in particular has to do with consultancy work. I think it's important to note that overall, internal audit should remain independent to the work that we do. So they can't be captured by management at any stage. And what we do, we make sure that
we consult with them, they consult with us, and we use them for oversight purposes within the organization. So it's not consultancy per se in terms of rendering a service, but they provide an oversight role. So the target has been captured. It's essentially the objective has been captured as such, by that it clearly shows the type of a service that they have. They consult with management, they provide overview, and they maintain their independence. It was just for to clarify that stance that external audit has, but it hasn't really changed the section of the work that they do within the organization by the changing in the wording of target. It was just to actually escalate the situation. The security model does not necessarily focus on systemic matters. There's a separation between physical security as well as information and system security. The model that we're talking about cuts across the organization but focuses more on physical security. The system security is rooted within the ICT environment where the technical expertise is required to actually look at the firewalls, the ICT security, as well as the hardware and software issues that are there. So the model for security couldn't have been in a position to track the crash that was in that environment due to the focus that it has within the organization. The 60% WSP priorities, GMHR, you will actually cover that in your approach. And let me appreciate the comments from Honorable Mulekwa in this regard. Honorable Tito, all the SADC countries, 16, have been covered by GPW today. In terms of the reception, I've indicated earlier when I was presenting as well that it's a huge dependency, this one, in terms of our strategic intent. You go out to a country and you present your products and services to them in a form of what we can offer. And we go to embassies mainly because we can't be traveling around the world. As a self-revenue generating entity, we don't have the capacity to be all over the show. So we use the embassies when they come. They co-actually facilitate some of this. Home Affairs does that as well. You present to them and you put your best pitch on the table. The reception is good. We haven't had anyone who was adverse or negative to the products that we have presented. However, you would find that due to internal processes, some is a change of political leadership in their countries. Others is because there's delays in terms of the budget, in terms of funding. Others would decide in the process that, for instance, they want to resuscitate their own government printer within the country, and as a result, they want to partner with GPW. So those processes are amongst others that would cause delays in the finalization of the contract. For instance, I remember since 2017-18, pursuing Eswatini to print the passport, but to date, we've managed to print the certificates because of the internal matters that they are resolving in terms of that. So it's not always forthcoming of countries to come and say tomorrow we're doing this. They also have to be bound by their internal country at a legal level as well as technical level. But interest is there. We just need a nudging of some of them to say move with speed so that they can be able to come with GPW. But that we have already raised the concern, the finalization of the master plan becomes critical so that we don't go out there and promise the world when our facilities are not order. So hence we've been pushing for the master plan to be completed so that once we go to the African market, we know very well that we are ready to actually receive. So currently we've been doing it in by chunks and making sure that we print everything that has been requested of us. We notice as well that some of the contracts are bound with the colonial masters, like Minister correctly pointed out, but we've got a foot on the door so that when those contracts collapse or elapses, we should be able to then begin to engage with them. They really appreciate, some of them didn't even know GPW existed. So they appreciate the fact that there's a solution in Africa for them to come and experience. So we will actually be hoping that most of them will come back to come and print. We appreciate the pressure on master plan. It will really go a long way in enabling GPW to moving to the digital space as well as expanding our own in the country.
The last issue that I would like to talk to is the tracking of the findings by AG. We'll continue to do that, and we will indeed prepare a report when the opportunity calls us to deal with this matter. We are not resting. We know that there's a new management report that will be coming. So by the time it arrives, we want to have resolved the ones that we have on board and sort out the dependencies as well. Then we can deal with the whole question of repeat findings, but that also demonstrates that they're not capable of resolving the findings. But when we've resolved all of them and we can attend to the new ones, that's actually taken. I'm going to pause here and request GMHR to first take the questions that are related to IHR, the acting CIO, the issue of the uptime availability in terms of systems. This is a target, and I know previously we've said it's an industry standard related to ITO. It's a projection to sustain our operations and the fact that you can't get the 100% availability. Konyi, I think the question of 90% versus 100% before, I think you can take that. And then, yeah, the CFO will take the final one. Chair, through you, let me ask GMHR to take the podium, followed by the CFO, and then the acting CIO, and then Mr. Moore from operations. Thank you.
Thank you very much. In that order.
Thank you, CEO. Honorable Minister, Deputy Minister, members of the Portfolio Committee, and my colleagues in Government Printing Works, good morning. I have taken note of the questions that are related to HR, and I would give responses accordingly. There was a question, or rather a concern, that was raised on the animosity that existed between management and employees or the workforce in GPW, and a member wanted to find out where are we sitting and what is currently happening. Let me indicate that a lot has happened. A lot has happened, and management has also made efforts to ensure that they take a stand against ill-disciplined conduct that we were experiencing in GPW, not ignoring what could have triggered or what could have been the cause of such ill-discipline. It was for that reason that we have started a process of doing a culture audit. We have appointed through supply chain a service provider that would do a culture survey, a culture audit, so that we can get to the core and understand what are the things that are mainly troubling the employee that has led to such animosity, and what interventions can we come up with to try and change and transform the organizational culture. Not forgetting that one of the issues that was at the core of the concern from the workforce was the issue of a project called Benchmark. We went through a very tough time on that project, in that at some point organized labor lodged a dispute that they ultimately embarked on a formal process of embarking on a legal strike. We went through the process of engagement with organized labor to avoid the strike. Unfortunately, we ended up having to go through the court to interdict and rule on the issue of the matter that was of their dispute. And I need to confirm that in April, we received the ruling from the court that ruled in our favor. The strike was regarded as illegal. It was cancelled, and the issue of Benchmark was also ruled upon to say we do not have jurisdiction to be discussing issues of compensation and benefits. There was a concern that was raised on the issue of the vacancy list and the plan. On the issue of the vacancy list and the plan, the structure has recently been approved, as the Honourable Minister indicated at the opening. What we would share with the portfolio committee is that we will put together a three-year plan, because that's how we plan to phase in the structure over a period of 3 years. We will put a detailed three-year plan that can be monitored on its progress, and that would show all the vacancy list and how are we planning to fill in those positions. One needs to understand that when we started the process of the structure, or when we get to a point where the structure is approved, is not that we were at 100% full vacancy. No, there were positions that were still vacant in the old approved, in the original blueprint. However, those positions were no longer that much relevant to the operating model that we are pursuing to achieve our strategic and operational targets. So as a result, those positions, we were not in a position to fill them until we've got this approval. I want to also add on a question that was raised, or a concern that was raised, or a request that say we need to elaborate on the issue of the structure. It goes hand in hand with the issue of the vacancy list that I'm referring to. The organizational structure the process was embarked on to respond to our operational model that we are pursuing. You'd recall that our structure was a structure that was approved way back in around 2010. And it was the structure that was talking to our operational targets at that point in time, our clientele at that point in time, the kind of machinery that we were using at that point in time. And remember, being in a manufacturing environment, the manufacturing standard continuously changed. That requires more and different efficiencies and so forth. And that goes hand in hand with the new skills that one would require to be able to respond accordingly. It was for that reason that we had to review the structure and to be able to respond accordingly to our needs. Now, when you look into the currently approved structure, in addition with the ad hoc approvals that we've got along the way, we had 791 positions that were in that structure. And now we're going to require 1,146 people to be able to achieve our operational requirements or respond to our operating models. Out of that number, 75 of those positions are not necessarily new. Those are the positions that have been existing in the old blueprint. However, they needed to be redesigned to be aligned to how we are operating currently. So we're talking in an estimate of about 355 new positions. So that's the elaboration that I can add. And also in addition, when we were consulting with DPSA, we were actually encouraged to look into our core, that our core is more critical than any other enabling branch or section. So we are now going to have two core functions or two core branches in GPW. And there's also a branch that is going to consolidate other areas like your securities, like your ITC and so forth in corporate services. HR will also fall in that branch. So those are the critical areas that one needs to take note. And we need to understand that when we talk of this number that is being increased, majority of that number is in our core, is not necessarily in our support. There was a concern or a caution that talks to WSP priorities. The WSP priorities basically is your workplace skills plan. It's the annual plan that we submit that highlight all our critical training that we need as an organization. The training is holistic. It covers your technical skills that you required, your soft skills that you required, issues of culture, any other issue that requires development. I'll give a critical example. In our last WSPO, in our last training, we had to include an intervention that was running across the organization that was talking to gender-based violence. And if you look into that, that was not necessarily responding to GPW needs. It was looking at the holistic societal challenges that we had. So over and above the technical skills that we were giving the employees, we also included that particular intervention to ensure that we empower and make our workforce aware of the challenges that we are facing as a society so that they can, while they're effective members of GPW, they can also be effective members of the society. CEO, I think I've covered all the questions and concerns that have been raised. Or maybe just to add, if maybe members would like to see the recent WSP, we can also share that with you. It was submitted now on the 31st of last month. Thank you.
Thank you very much. We'll appreciate if you can share it with us. CFO?
Thank you, Chair.
The first one is just the budget breakdown per program. Absolutely, we do have that per program. We have actually, as part of the stat planning sessions and APP sessions, worked it back from program level up to the level of GPW. And we do report that on a quarterly basis. And if the member wants to, we can obviously make that available. It does also show our movements year on year, as also and also some assumptions based on that movement. So that program, the budgets are available. The outstanding audits, as it stands now, is for 2021. And we've obviously had significant data losses, which meant we lost some of our GL information going backwards. We have employed at least two technical skills to assist us with rebuilding those trial balances. But there will be some significant risk in terms of the completeness and accuracy of the 2021 financial year. The target for that submission is the 31st of May, and we're working hard to do that. Subsequent to that, we will have to look at the balances, negotiate, or also involve the AG and set up the 21-22 financial year finances at least by the end of July of this financial year. You know, I would just say that there is still a risk within this in terms of accuracy and completeness, but we are looking at ways of dealing with it. We've got a very good relationship at the moment with the AG in terms of us responding to their requests for information and responding to the communications. I foresee that this relationship will go forward, and that we'll get some assurances from them within the next financial year. The balance sheet wasn't necessarily removed. We do have the balance sheet projections for both the financial years, the outer financial years, which I can make available quite readily. Just to answer the question directly, the year-end balance of the trade and receivables at the end of 2023 should stand at about 264 million as we project. And deferred income at the end of 2023 should stand at 177 million rand. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much. CEO, is there any other responses you have delegated?
Chairperson, yes. The acting CIO and acting GM Operations and Production, and Ms. Chibang. Thank you.
Thank you, in that order.
Yeah, thank you very much, Chairperson. Good day to the Minister, Deputy Minister, members of the Portfolio Committee, Executive and all protocol observed. There was a question that was raised around system uptime or availability. So when we look at that, we look at it holistically as service hours subtracting downtime. So what we do is that over a period of a financial year, we run planned downtime where we do our service maintenances or as and when there's a requirement if we see any vulnerability. So hence, that is why it is not possible to have 100% uptime. Because there are service maintenances that are often done. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. In that order.
Thank you, Honorable Chairperson. In response to some of the questions operationally, I want to also acknowledge that many of the questions and many of the comments come back to some of the comments around SADC and our move and strategic move into Africa. But it's also a strategic move to have global significance, nationally, regionally, continentally, and the global sphere. It's to establish ourselves as the government printing works as a security printer globally, one that has reputation and can be relied on. Now, in order to do that, one has to always balance between moving far ahead of yourself or ourselves as a country and a printing works, as well as deal with some of the changes that's happening in the market from a printing technology and a security printing standpoint. Many printing works or security printing works of countries over the last 20 years have fallen because of their inability to strategize, inability to see what's coming forward, and inability to change. We are also in that same sphere of ensuring that we can sustain ourselves. And some of the key things for us to do and that we are doing now is that we are establishing the relationships. We are establishing a global presence in many committees as well as bodies and associations. And we are working on projects with our neighbors in the SADC area at this stage, small projects and large projects at the same time. That's within our capacity. We also don't want to be able to present ourselves to the world and not be able to deliver on any of those mandates. The next phase as well would come in capacitating ourselves and the facilities, the skills and the knowledge in our systems. We do know that there's some deep dependencies in terms of our master plan and our organizational structure and some of our knowledge gathering approach in our system. So those foundations have to be in place before we can start presenting ourselves throughout the continent as well as then globally. And thereafter, once we have that solid foundation, we've reviewed the strategy and we are still understand where we are going in terms of printed matter, security printed matter, as well as the hybrid digital world, we will then be able to grow slowly and review ourselves frequently. So that's the reason why we do not just target a global market, but we start with our SADC area as well as maintaining our internal customers, our key customers internationally. On the matter of security paper or critical supply of substrates, we have two critical supply of substrates, that's paper as well as polycarbonate, and these have been in our plans and strategic plans for many years. Yes, most certainly it was the desire of GPW to consider its own paper mill. That's to ensure that we can secure supply of paper given the changes within the country of the current security paper providers. The paper industry is diminishing globally. So with it goes the security paper that's being done on the side, and it's being consolidated into a few paper mills around the world, if you want good quality paper mills. It's between ourselves, the security printers, as well as the currency printers of the world that make sure this is in order. Our relationships currently with Intergraph, as well as KU, show that our neighbors or neighboring countries are very much looking at the same, whether it's important for them to secure their own paper substrates or consolidate paper substrates into the handful of accredited and ISO-accredited secure paper suppliers globally. We are in the same realm. And I guess the COVID pandemic issue of the last 2 years has also got us to refocus and to ensure that we know which direction we're going. We would still want to conclude that feasibility study, even if we understand that it most likely will say that it's not feasible for us to have a local paper mill, but we would still want to consider that research and that study. And at the moment, it wasn't as critical as ensuring that we secure supply of paper. So we opted for secure supply of paper, of security paper, over and above the research into the security paper mill. Currently, there are procurement activities, and we should have secured our security paper supplier soon. We have current stocks of paper. We have no concerns of us running out of security paper, and we feel that and the planning is that we will, once we have our new supplier, we'll be able to redesign paper. As I'm talking about redesigns, it very much touches on the subject of counterfeits and the counterfeit items that are found currently. The counterfeit items in the country and around the world, I've got interaction over the past month with two significant bodies that deal with counterfeiting as well as security printing. And the message is very clear. Counterfeiting is getting critically out of hand globally on the matter of passport and identification and a little on reader documents. We are fortunate that we find ourselves in a good place when it comes to our passports and identity documents. And reader documents, we find that in order to achieve this counterfeit documents, they must have the design, or the criminal element must have the designs, or they must be able to reproduce a design. They must be able to secure the paper substrate or whatever other substrate and have the printing technology. These three things together is very challenging for the criminal element to have together. So you find themselves focusing on one area, it might be just the paper, and then being very poor in the design and very poor in the technology and being found out very easily. Similarly, we found that people are attaining some of the design, but they cannot put it on a security paper, nor can they have the technology to replicate what the GPW is doing. We work very closely with counter-corruption as well as the inspection portion of the Department of Home Affairs by ourselves doing the forensic analysis once these items are found. And thereafter, we are reviewing which area must we do further investigations and change. Some of our paper is 12 to 13 years old, and it requires regular review. And that's one of the critical items of having a new security paper supplier, is that then it allows us to not only review paper designs over 10 years, but probably over 3 to 5 years, so that we keep ahead of the criminal element that continuously tries to source or replicate. The biggest problem globally is not only sourcing paper that is the same paper as security supplies, but to replicate it close enough that most of the public would be fooled. And so our job then is to ensure that we design out this ability to replicate the paper. I believe those are all the aspects that we were dealing with operationally. If there is any other CEO that I've missed, I will allow you to guide. Thank you, Chair.
Chairperson, maybe before he steps off the podium, there was an issue of the arrests which were made in that investigation. Remember the paper that was used? The reference is to the paper on how secured it is, and I think we had a discussion on that.
Can you leave that to me? I'll answer that one.
With respect, Chairperson, this is where we will rest. Thank you.
Okay, thank you very much. I'm going to invite the DM to make comments, and we then get the minister. Deputy Minister?
No, thank you, Chair. I think the only issue that I will emphasize is around the issue of public works, that we really need to have that engagement at a level of the portfolio committees, or they become joint, just like we will normally do with the CETA as well. So I think they are going to assist us quite a lot. The other issues, I really think they have been covered by the team. Thank you.
Thank you, Deputy Minister. Minister?
Yeah, Chairperson, I just want to answer two questions or two areas of concern. The first one is the issue of counterfeiting, which Mr. Gubernaido was trying to respond to. I don't want us to confuse the arrest that took place about syndicates that are defrauding. Let's not confuse that with perhaps counterfeiting government printing works. Government printing works has not yet been counterfeited in any way, meaning reproducing the type of security paper that they've got. Nobody has been able to do that yet. The area which is being defrauded is the Department of Home Affairs, because the fraudsters are not producing their own paper. They are defrauding Home Affairs, and the real paper in government printing works is produced. For instance, let me give you an example of the passports that were being printed for Pakistanis. It was real passports using the real paper from government printing works, because government printing works received that which needs to be printed from the Department of Home Affairs. So it was the real thing. But where was the fraud? The fraud was that South Africans were selling their own identity in Home Affairs offices, as you saw. They sold their own identity for passports to be printed in their names, but given to a Pakistani national whose photo it is that appears there. So there's no way government printing works won't print that, because it's an official consignment from Home Affairs in the same way as they do every day when they receive things from Home Affairs. And so that's why we concentrating on stopping the fraud from the side of Home Affairs, and even arresting people, especially including South Africans who are selling their own identity. We have not yet finished arresting. I suspect that in the next coming days, you will see more arrests, and the people who are going to be arrested will mostly be South Africans who are selling their own identity in order to make this type of fraud possible. Now, on the side of government printing works, what was attempted, which failed, was that there is a immigration a practitioner who tried to get the real paper from the real document from government printing works on which we print permits. They wanted to get the blank paper in order to put the names of the permits themselves. So they were not really defrauding the document. They asked somebody to get the real paper and give it to them, the real paper that government printing works produces, steal it and give it to them, whereby they will put the names of the people who want to come here with their permit. The fact that they had to ask for the real paper is because they can't reproduce them on their own. And fortunately, the official reported the matter, and there was a sting operation, and the people have been arrested. And as you know, they are now serving 15 years each for what they were trying to do. But what really satisfies me is the fact that they could not reproduce that paper. If they could, they would have done so. They wouldn't have exposed themselves to an official who was supposed to steal it. They would have produced it on their own, but because they failed, they tried to get somebody to steal it for them. The last issue I want to deal with, Chairperson, is a very important question by Honorable Lizelle van der Merwe, whether there has been stability, because she's asking this question because you have been there many times. You saw the problem between management and the workers. I will say, as far as I'm concerned, the management tried their best to engage the workers as the committee instructed, so that there are discussions, and those have been ongoing. But I must say, there is a problem on the side of some of the unions, particularly PSA. They insisted on that issue which we told you about, of benchmarking and saying their salaries must be increased, or they have been promised by the former acting CEO that their salaries will be increased. They have been told many times, and I want to stay here, Chairperson, there's no leader of a trade union who doesn't know that nobody in the public service negotiates salaries with a minister or a department. All salaries in the public service are negotiated in the bargaining chamber. And they've been told so, that no individual, not even a minister, not even a president, has got the power to promise a union that their salaries will be increased outside their bargaining chamber. But they insisted, and until they went on a labor action, the matter had to go to court, as the DDG of HR, Ms. Michelle Mudisi, has explained. It has to go to the labor court. And the judge warned them, he actually warned them never to raise this issue again, because they are aware that it's wrong. But guess what? Even after losing with cost, guess what? They are appealing the judgment, besides being warned by the judge that please don't do this. What you are demanding is undesirable and is unfair. But they go on doing that. So I will say at the moment the stability, because we are enforcing it. The stability is not because some of the labor union want stability. It's because we are enforcing it, and some of them are aware of the investigation which is going on there, and they are getting scared because some people have already been fingered, or they've already been, that some people are being fingered. So we'll continue to making sure that we impose stability, because government printing works is a very important institution. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Minister, and your team for detailed responses on the issues which were raised by our members, the honorable members. And also thanks very much for your comment and appreciation of work in progress. Some of the challenges which were highlighted, we need to collectively work to strengthen and assist the
government printing works. We have identified progress since we have interacted with the government printing works, and I think it's encouraging to identify positive signals at the level of government printing works. We'll also, as we said earlier on, that we'll accurately determine the stability work in terms of governance once we have observed and monitored the action plan of the audit findings, which you have reported on. And I think that is the posture we are taking, that we need to track the implementation of the finding of the AG. And I think it's quite interesting to look on the review, as we have indicated, the CEO, that will be subjecting your achievements on the resolving some of the findings to the Auditor General. It will be important that that report be presented to ourselves. And I think we'll invite also the AG as we be interacting with this matter. The third point, Minister, is I think members of the Portfolio Committee, we ought to elevate this positive progress on the footprint of government printing works in the SADC countries. It will be quite important, though we have some of the challenges that were interacting or confronting at government printing works. But at the positive side, we may need to, at our own space, elevate the positive work and change the narrative that suggests that government printing works is not doing well. You are always focusing on or dealing with corrupt activities, and that are not yielding positive results. But I think at a level of a committee engagement and our parliamentary postures and the minister, we need to elevate this positive progress, because it then elevates good governance and good progress in our country as part of the institution of government. So I think we need to work towards that, making time and utilizing the space in our own available podiums to elevate this point of government printing works. We'll await the investigation, as I've related earlier on, that you have and received support from the Portfolio Committee, that is the task team that's led by Meng Gumbi, to present to the committee, so that as part of working against the maladministration within the system of government printing works, we are able to move forward in terms of making sure that what members, in fact, what Honorable Zellis raised in terms of stability of a government printing works, we must collectively work towards that and look on that report that will be presented. We'll schedule it once Menko has looked on the report, no, sorry, on the schedule and atomized, so that we're able to thoroughly engage on that. And I have indicated earlier on that we are going to be swift in terms of the recommendation, and hope that the minister will ground your foot down in terms of the recommendation for implementation as the government printing works. Members and the minister, thanks very much for accompanying the IEC and the government printing works to present their APP to ourselves, and they will interact and deliberate once the report is consolidated, so that we're able to debate on these issues that are raised by the APP. Thanks very much, Government Printing Works team. We note the progress made, and we wish you well in terms of their work that you are engaging on. I'm going to invite Mr. Matonsi to indicate if there's any other matter that you need to alert members of the committee. Mr. Matonsi?
Hi, Chairperson. There's no other issue except that on Friday we do have a meeting where the legal service of Parliament will be responding or looking at the issue of legal issues on the report that the department responded to on Friday. That's all, Chairperson.
Okay. Thanks very much, members and the committee and our research team, portfolio committee, for the good work you are assisting the committee to interact with the reports that were presented to our members. Thanks, Minister, DM, and the entire team. Our meeting stands adjourned.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you, honorable members. Thank you very much.
Thanks, Chair.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you, Minister.
Colleagues.
Thank you.